kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Oh, that reminds me, do you guys, I know we're streaming this, but do you want me to record my audio locally so that when you just put the podcast
I just record the entire stream and take the audio from that. So it is significantly less work and effort because, again, I ain't got time for that shit.
That's not what you guys are about. I love it.
Settings. Okay. All right. Well, it's high now.
Nice.
Woo.
I wish I was high right now.
Now it's high now. I didn't save, so.
Oh, man, yeah, I live where it's legal. I could just get baked during the show. There's nothing you guys could do about it.
Episode 420, no lie, that shit will happen.
Oh, boy.
A couple months away, that will happen for episode. Episode 420 will be that episode.
I'm going to hold you to that. If I tune in for episode 420 and you guys aren't fucking blazing at it.
If you partake, join us for episode 420.
I do occasionally
with me and whoever the hell else is with me that day.
I've never participated in a podcast or left my couch while doing it. So that'll be a twofer.
I feel like we're wasting all of this conversation. So I'm just going to start the show.
Yeah, it's time to go.
Yeah. Sorry. This is my A material. It only gets shittier from here. So you might want to. You might want to get this thing on the road, huh?
Yeah, let's get this started. So what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a really, really fun show lined up. If you can't tell already, joining me, guest co-host right now, Tim Ekubis. How are you doing, man?
Hey, I'm okay. I'm good. I was really, really sick this morning, so I took the day off and did nothing, and now I feel better. So I can actually be a live participant on this instead of a less live one.
Nice. That sounds like a good day overall.
Yeah.
I mean, the morning sounds kind of iffy, but the rest of it,
God,
not
I was
working.
Like getting ready to leave for work, and I was just like sweating, and I'm like, this isn't good. I can't do this. This is why I have sick days.
And then also joining us, composer Ryan Eich. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yay!
I'm good. I also didn't basically do shit today, but I don't have the excuse of, like, my body failing me. I just didn't want to.
It was just a Tuesday.
I'm just a freelancing piece of shit, and I can just, like, do that if I want, you know? So,
I'm
so happy
to have a guest on who just talks like that. Like, so many times I get guests on. Yeah, pretty much. So many times we get guests on who are like, well, darn it, you know, things just happen. And, you know, if the crap hits the fan.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that literally every podcast interview I've ever given, I like the first question out of my mouth is like, can I swear? Because it's going to happen either way, like by accident. it's so like woven into the way that I speak now, because I'm a etiquette-less monster, and so like the fact that you guys have no standards, I guess I would say, is actually
very, very accurate. That is as accurate a description of the show as it gets. We have no standards.
Hence why I'm here. Like, you just answered the question of like, why did you guys want me here? Like, oh, because you don't need to shoot for the big guns.
Well, we brought you here because Tim just reviewed a game that you did the music for. We should probably mention that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Is that a conflict of interest?
What?
Is Gamergate going to, like, get me that I'm on
the
show?
No, they don't listen.
Okay, thank God.
So, Tim, do you have any questions for the composer of the game that you have reviewed for the SML podcast?
No, I'm good. See you later. No, I'm kidding. man, that was a good soundtrack. Well, I thought.
we should probably mention the game, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, correct?
Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, yes.
I appreciate that. I also love when people compliment me and then they add a qualifier like that. It was really good. I mean, I thought other people.
I don't want to put myself out there too much. I don't want to stand too close to this.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Dark Mika in chat. Talk shit about Gamergate. Do eat. Why?
No,
ruin themselves the way it is?
Yeah, we don't need to own a group that's eternally just owning its fucking self. Like, they made up a mascot to prove that
God. That fucking thing.
You guys are the
Yeah, I haven't thought about Gamergate in a long time, so I completely forgot about her.
Isn't that great? Not
yeah.
thinking about that.
It's spectacular.
It's really good.
How yeah. shitty is it for that game retail site Gamersgate?
I think about that. Yeah. A lot.
Like those poor people, they put their time and effort into this business, and then Gamergate comes along and they're just, ah, fuck.
One time when I was in, I used to live kind of out near San Francisco in the Bay Area, and there was a jewelry store that, this was like years ago before this was what it obviously is now, but there's just a jewelry store called like ISIS. And it's just like, oh no, like once that shit got out of control, you know, they were like, oh, God damn it. Like, how are we supposed to sell a brooch with like world affairs being the way they are? So I reckon it's something like that.
Don't buy brooches from terrorists.
Yeah, support Boko Haram by getting a ring at this jewelry store. It's like, oh shit.
Gone. So yeah, that soundtrack was pretty great music, huh?
Yeah, no, it is. And it really, I felt like it really felt the, fit the like the style of the game and what the game was trying to evoke overall with the you know, the folksy, you know, early 1900s. Oh my God, put me back to bed. Just put me down.
Back in the 1400s.
Yeah, back set in the 1400s. I mean, I was really good at history, guys. I got a degree.
Yeah, he misspoke when he said where the water tastes like wine. I actually wrote the music for
Kingdom Come Deliverance. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So no, he's spot on.
Yeah, no, I love obviously the Vagrant song. It seems to kind of be like the central piece of the soundtrack in the game with, I don't know how many different variations of it in multiple languages.
Yeah, we got a Spanish language track, and I really owe the people who sing on that track, May Claire LaPlante and Jose Ruiz, mm-hmm. who are friends of mine and are amazing, are also the ones who helped me translate it. Thank God, because I can't. Like,
yeah,
donde está la biblioteca, and that's about as far as I can get. So, like, thank God that they helped me do that.
Es muy bueno. Sí. Muy grande.
Yeah. So the idea with that song, and I hopefully this came through for you, Tim. But like, the idea is that I really wanted to kind of evoke this idea that music in general, and like especially like folk music, gets traded around and it kind of travels and has its life mm-hmm. of its own. Like musicians share it and they put their own spin on it and then they share it and someone else adds something to it. And I really like that idea. So that's kind of what I was hoping happens as you're walking around the world map, which if you're not familiar with the game or you haven't played the game, the world map is just kind of the continental United States. And you can walk around literally like you're like a giant skeleton on this map, like walking around. And, when you get to different regions, the song that you're hearing that I wrote multiple versions of kind of changes and shifts to reflect where you are. So you'll hear like a bluegrass version in Appalachia, and then you'll hear kind of a Scandinavian version when you're rocking in my home state of Minnesota. And that's I'm hoping that wasn't grating for you because I was really happy.
No, not at all. No, that was awesome. And ties into that's the kind of the whole theme of the game is trading around stories and. Yep. You know, meeting and interacting with people. So yeah, that definitely comes through with that song. And that was really cool. What was funny is how long it took me to realize that it was the same song.
Oh, in thank God.
Ways. Cause I'm like so stupid. And I'm just like, Oh wait. That's why I'm able to hum along all the time with the song.
I just thought I was some kind of time traveling genius that already knew all the notes of the song I haven't heard before. it's actually good to hear that it took you a while because I know most people seem to really love the soundtrack, which is great. But mm-hmm. I think one criticism I have gotten from a few review outlets is that it gets a little, just for some people, it got a little repetitive, mm-hmm. which we're kind of patching the way music works on the overmap because there's actually a ton of music in this game. Like, you know, I think it's upwards of 2 hours, which for an indie game is up there. But you only hear certain things on the world map. So knowing that, like, it actually took you a minute to be like, oh, shit, this is the same song. It's actually kind of cool to hear. I don't want it to be like, God damn it, this again.
Yeah, no, it was never struck me like that. Did you have anything to do with the whistling as well? I wonder.
Yeah, so I didn't do that. But I made that work. It's just not me whistling. There's an amazing lady named Chelsea Green who is like literally known for whistling. She's I want to say Quiet Riot. I don't think that's it, but there's some 80s band that she's like, as a child, like whistles like on their album. Like, yeah. And she, my last game, West of Loathing, she did all the like kind of Western style, like whistling in that. She just has this really like perfect, pure, like cartoony sounding, like in a good way, like this really like solid whistle. And so, we hired her to kind of do some renditions of some of the music that I wrote in the game, which again, if you're not familiar, in the game, you can like kind of your character's walking around and you move really slow because it's kind of a meditative experience. But if you want to move a little faster, you can like whistle and your character will kind of like whistle along with the music and you play this kind of like guitar hero-ish kind of like prompt to like sing the notes correctly, I suppose.
Yeah, just like a little rhythm game thing just to kind of scoot you along a little faster.
Yeah, just to like occupy you while you're kind of roaming around.
Mm-hmm.
This game sounds so goddamn good, and it makes me sad that my computer is hot garbage.
Oh.
Oh, no, really? Oh, well, it's coming out
it is trash.
It's, I mean, you're running Skype like a champ right now, if I may.
Yeah, boy.
It's coming out on PS4 and Xbox One, so if you have one of those lying around.
Oh, hell yeah. I didn't know it was hitting consoles. I am definitely going to grab it on Xbox One when it lands.
Nice. You don't have to say that just because I'm here.
Oh no, I'm going to get it on Xbox One. It's going to happen. I don't bullshit about games I'm going to get because I get most of them anyway.
Yeah, he gets all of them.
I have problems with purchasing things. Like there's an indie sale going on Xbox this week. I looked at the list. I didn't own just one game on the list.
Jesus.
And then I bought it for $6.
Do you actually play any of these is the question. Cause like
a chunk of them,
like everybody, I have the eternal like reams of games on my shelf and like a Steam queue, you know, just a mile long with stuff that like, I just this week I started playing Dragon Age Inquisition cause I discovered I owned it. I was like, oh, like it was still in a shrink wrap, and I was like, dang, I didn't even know I bought this. So
this is a thing. Might as well pop it in, huh?
Yeah. Do you have that problem, or do you actually get? Are you unlike me in that you actually complete games?
Oh, my backlog is just indefensibly large at this point in time.
Nice. I actually made a resolution of mine this year to play old things that I own in my house instead of just buying games and then playing those. I'm like, I'm really trying to make an effort to play some of these games I've had sitting around for years.
Oh, I thought when you said like you play old things you find in your house, you didn't mean games. You just meant like you play microwave.
I found a loot. I found this old loot.
Right. Oh, sick. I'm gonna learn how to shred on this thing.
Apparently own a banjo.
No. I am also one of the ones with, you know, the giant Steam library, and I have tons and tons of like classic games in my house going back to the NES, like hundreds of games. And,
oh, you're dipping way back. Yeah, you're
oh true. yeah. I have actually played almost all of the NES games that I own, which is impressive because there's 200 of them. I've been playing them all my life, but
good lord.
So I actually wrote down like the dozen or so that I have never actually played, so I'm trying to touch all those this year. And
which ones?
Yeah, what's on your docket?
Oh my god, okay, hang on. Let me pull up my spreadsheet. I have a spreadsheet
one
entire game inventory. Let's see here. Oh, actually, it's in a dock here.
Yeah, well, you're looking that up. I have this issue where every time I see a game, it's like, oh man, I should go back and play that. I'll sit down and then just fire up Rock Band instead.
Oh my god. Do you still got like the whole host of like plastic instruments like in your house?
Oh, you're goddamn right. I just got a new guitar 2 days ago. I was so excited.
Oh my god.
you wouldn't believe how hard guitars are to find anymore. Like instruments, because the last time they released new instruments wasn't last Christmas, it was the Christmas before.
No, they're like endangered condors. Like,
are you trying to get the new ones? Number. Like the new ones?
Yeah, because the guitar I had is starting to crap out. So like GameStop, I have friends who work at the GameStop. They like five different times they tried getting a guitar shipped in from another store, and they finally got one, and I was so happy.
Yeah, because I think those were getting like clearance during Christmas. I saw it like Toys R Us. Like if there was any left, they were getting the hell out of there.
Guitar Hero was getting clearanced out for $20, but Rock Band has been like damn impossible to find.
I assume you had to pay like with a bag full of bald eagle heads or Fabergé eggs.
It was $40.
Oh my god.
They just found it and shipped it, and I bought it and I was happy.
Yeah, when I used to have Guitar Hero like in my active rotation, it was the same way. It was like I could literally play anything else, or I could play this again for like the 100th time. It's just, it's so easy to like sit down. It fits kind of into your life perfectly. It's so easy to just sit down and like jam out a song. If you have like a 5 minute break or something, you know, it's like, it's the perfect game to fit into the like dumb cracks of actual joy in adult life. that's one thing. Like I did an interview, with an indie game website earlier this week. And one of the questions they asked me was like, how has your attitude towards games changed as you've gotten older? And like, for me, the number one thing is like, and this, I know this is, anybody listening, this is like a privileged position to be at. So I'm apologizing up front that I sound like an asshole. But like, when I was a teenager and you read a bullet point like on the back of a box that was like, oh, this Fallout 3 has like 100 hours of gameplay, and you'd be like, hell yeah. And now, like, if I hear a game is good and but somebody's like, oh, it's good, but it's only like 6 hours long, I'm like, fuck, yes. Because like, maybe, yes! Maybe I'll actually finish this one. Like, everybody was, I never played it, but everybody's complaining about the, what is that werewolf game? Like, The Order, I think, came out, and it was like,
oh, 1886, that PS4 game.
Yeah, it was like 4 hours long or something.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's actually good. It could be bad for other reasons, but like, that sounded like heaven to me. Like, I was like, are you kidding? I can finish it in a sitting? Like, hell yes.
It was a solid interactive movie for the most part. I don't know if it was a $60 interactive movie. Like, when it dropped down to 40, 30, 40 bucks, it was definitely worth playing through.
And that's the thing. Like, I can understand people getting pissed about it when it's like, this is 60. I don't really like to measure games worth in their length. I think that's kind of silly. But there is kind of a line somewhere where it's like, you want me to pay $60 for this plus like more in tax, and then like, you know, have it be that short, but like, just get it on sale. Every game goes on sale like a week later.
Or you can be an asshole like me and buy the collector's edition.
So you've got Mr. Part of the Problem here. Yes.
Yes, I am. I am part of the cause, the problem. I'm what is wrong with the gaming industry today.
You're the one powering this fucking horror factory that is AAA games. Like, you are doing this to me and to all of us.
You're welcome.
What was your dumb tchotchke? Did you get like a werewolf statue or something? Like, what?
There's a huge fucking statue with it. If you guys want to entertain yourselves, this is going to be great for the MP3 audience, but I'll go grab it real quick.
Oh, I'm going to actually just Google it right now, because I have to know, like...
Well, fine then. Yeah, Google it. Whatever.
I bought the Doom Collector's Edition when that was on like clearance, so there's a giant demon light up statue over on the other side of my basement.
That's a cool statue.
Cause,
too,
because, you know, I need that in my life.
I actually do kind of want to see yours, Joe, because I'm finding a lot of like bullshit in this Google search, and I need to know which of these coveted items you actually ended up spending on.
I'll go grab it, entertain yourselves.
Tim, what about you? What are you playing right now?
Right now, well, let's see. I'm playing through
when Final Fantasy. When
I'm not reviewing something, yeah. So I've been playing through Final Fantasy V for the very first time. That's one of my old games that I'm playing through. I'm playing some Pokemon Pinball, Ruby and Sapphire. I've been big into getting my Game Boy Advance.
Nice. God, that's such a good system.
It is. Well, I just, my mind broke in several spectacular ways. So I got like a new shell for it and totally refurbished it. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever right now. Other than that, like, still my go-tos are like PUBG and Overwatch with my crew, because
you're an Overwatch shitbag like me.
Yes, awesome. I am. But, well, it's like, you know, you were saying, you know, you like games that are shorter. Like, what I found along with that is that when I get home and once the child is in bed, I don't have the brain capacity to learn something new anymore. So I just keep going back to the same shit.
For real. And it's, again, it's that same thing. Like, Overwatch, I love it because the matches are roughly like 7 minutes long. So again, I set my own schedule because, again, as previously discussed, freelancer piece of shit. But yep. I try to keep to a roughly, you know, like 8 hour work day with like a lunch break, because my wife has a normal work schedule. So I want to like fit mine to hers so we can actually see each other.
Yeah.
And like, I'll play Overwatch like on a lunch break, like all the time, just because like you can stop and like do a match and be done. Mm-hmm. And again, I already like wasn't finishing games anyway.
Yeah.
And now, like, I've been playing basically since it came out, and it has put the fucking brakes completely on like me ever seeing the end of a piece of digital content ever again. Like, it's not gonna happen.
yeah, it takes something, usually something pretty special, to tear me away from that. Because that's also the only way that I socialize with people. generally, these days, I don't get
out of the house very much. All the best people play Overwatch, so that's
really I have friends, so.
Okay.
And I'm not saying they're great people, but they are people that I know.
they're the assholes you've chosen.
Yes, exactly. It's very much.
They're your assholes, Tim.
The assholes I deserve. And the assholes that
I
need.
By the way, if anybody is watching the stream right now, I am holding up the statue. I've been showing it off for the past minute or so.
Oh, I have to actually like look at the stream.
Yeah, because my video goes to OBS. I can't put it in Skype as well. But
God, how much did you spend on this?
I don't remember.
It's probably better that way.
You blacked out. Are you?
It's terrible.
The more I look at it, the harder it gets to look at. So, like, how much are you happy you have this in your life? Like, can we start there?
I think it's a cool looking statue. That I don't think the game was worth what I paid for it and everything with it, but I think it is an awesome looking statue.
It's, I mean, it's a rat. If you're gonna get a statue of a cranky dog, like, that's a good one. That's one of the best. That's the best one of those I've ever seen.
It's cool. I like the statue. I love having cool statues to show off. If people have ever looked in the background of the streams, they could see a bunch of shit behind me. I have too much shit.
I know. I'm peeping your Amiibo shelf right now.
Yeah, boy.
I've been kind of staring at your various capitalist ephemera behind you. You've got quite a collection. When I keep trying to do the opposite. Especially when you move, like we moved to Seattle a couple years ago and did a big like clean out because you just realized like, oh, everything I own and everything I am is garbage when you move.
Yep.
But I'm slowly like, I can't throw stones at you. I literally have I'm looking at a Spider-Man fidget cube that's on my desk right now. So I can't I'm not one to like cast aspersions right now.
Oh yeah. There's like 20 Amiibo on my desk and half, you know, dozen Overwatch figures. It's covered in crap.
Yeah, I got a little Tracer on my desk too, who is my main and who I am horrible at.
Oh.
So yeah, I can't, I don't have a ground to stand on, okay, to look down on you here.
Oh.
I heard the dog. Are the kids back?
No, I think that is my dog you are hearing that.
Oh, nice.
That is my dog barking at something upstairs. I do not know what is going on.
Oh, I just looked it up. That statue, the addition with that was $150.
Oh my God.
Which is surprisingly compared to some of the shit that comes out now. Like, look at the Destiny 2 Collector's Edition that had a goddamn backpack for $250.
Yes, but you can't be like, see, the poop that I paid money for is better than the poop that some other people pay money for. Like, you still paid $150 for it. But I mean, again, if you actually have like a collection going, if people are just listening to this in audio format, he's got like a really nice kind of. Yeah. Set up a various statuettes and stuff behind him. So like, I can see like wanting to add to a collection like that and be like, this will look cool amongst my other stuff.
One of these days I should just do like a walkthrough of my living room, because the shelves you see behind me, maybe
that is a fraction,
like 5-10% of what I have. Maybe.
Oh my God.
I have friends walk into my house is like, dude, do you own a fucking museum or something? Cause I have too much shit. I fully admit I have way too much shit. Way too much.
It's your insurance policy, right? Like, if you ever fell on hard times, you could liquidate your assets, so to speak, and probably be rolling in like other nerds' money.
Yeah, apparently that premium edition, people are selling it for $240 on Amazon right now.
Jesus Christ.
So maybe I'll dust it off and throw it on Amazon and make a couple of bucks back. That'd be fun.
Hey, Joe, funny story, probably about 15 years ago or something like that, I bought a copy of Magic Knight Rayearth for Sega Saturn from you for about $30.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I sold it for like $200 last year.
And the funny thing is, you could probably get even more now.
Oh, yeah, that thing has gone up.
So eat it, sucker.
I sold like most of my Saturn collection last year because I was sick of looking at my credit card bill. and I hadn't played any of them in a long time.
It's like, I thought I did well when I sold my copy of Earthbound for $500. That shit could get over a grand now.
Jesus.
It's like
you had the full box version, right?
I did.
Yeah, I sold a cartridge only for close to 200.
Yeah, we needed it for bills, so it kind of had to go, and we paid. We got caught up with what we were owed, or what we owed.
Do you not
own
a physical copy of Earthbound anymore?
No, I don't. Not anymore.
Oh my gosh!
Wow, I have a Super Nintendo Classic though.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's on there.
Yeah. Oh man, I was at Nintendo headquarters, which has a Nintendo store in it, and if you're there, they'll just let you like buy shit from Nintendo directly at like employee prices.
Oh, nice.
And they had that's when I got my Switch, and they had a stack of NES classics back when those were like impossible to get. Or maybe they're still impossible to get. I don't know.
I don't think they've started making them again yet. So yeah, they're not easy to get yet.
The NES is still hard to find. The Super Nintendo is still out there fairly well, but I think this summer the NES is coming back.
Yeah.
I regret every day that I didn't just buy one. Oh. I was like, well, I'm already spending all this money on a Switch. I'm not going to do it. It's like, you stupid dumbass. Like you. But also, like, emulators are a thing. I can play anything on there whenever I want. Yeah. But it's like, it's dumb because I'm trying to clear out, but I want that physical manifestation of my childhood, which is how they get you.
Well, like, do the mix. Well, you could soft mod the NES Classic or the SNES. No, you can. It's really easy to do and just load it up with games.
Really?
Well, yeah. Let me tell you how dumb I am, is that I own about 18 of the games on the SNES Classic right over there. I'm pointing for no reason. I have the original cartridges, like everything except for like Kirby's Air Ride, obviously Star Fox 2 and something else. Like I have the cartridges for and the Super Nintendo to play them. And I still got one because I just love my Super Nintendo.
That did you say Kirby's Air Ride?
Yeah, you know what I mean. Dream Course. That
I love Dream Course, too. I fucking love Dream Course.
Dream Course is incredible. I will fight anybody who says it's not great. Like, I think you're their target market is the thing. Like, when they sat around and they invented the SNES Classic, they were like...
target market.
They were like, who should we sell this Super Metroid box to? And they were like, well, people who already bought Super Metroid. And like, that's you. So you're good to go.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. See, Tim, you're part of the problem, too.
Well, I justify it to myself that this will be a very simple, straightforward way for my growing child and his interest in video games to interface with Super Nintendo games rather than...
You did it for the kids.
Yes, rather than effing up my card. It's for the kid. Yep.
Sure. Yeah, and I justify all the statues I buy by, oh, hey, look, this is something new my cats can chew on.
Like... In a after they eat my corpse when I die in my apartment kind of way, or
probably
it's good to plan ahead.
I seriously have like four or five statues here that like the swords are chewed up or like just their hands are mangled up from kittens chewing on. I'm like, you fucking asshole cats. Oh man, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
I actually have a semi-serious question. Because you did work on Glitter Mitten Grove. Did you know what that thing was when you were working on it?
I did.
Keep
yes.
you in the dark. Oh, okay.
Darn. It would have been hard because I did all the music for Glitter Mitten Grove and then a decent pile of the actual music for the Frog Fractions 2 content as well.
All right.
that would have been hilarious though. Like there are definitely people who bought Glitter Mitten Grove to this day and still didn't know.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, look, a fairy game. And they just like bought it. It's like, I mean, sure. No, I did not. I did not. I knew about it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I am waiting. There's a friend of mine who I dropped Frog Fractions 1 on, and I'm waiting to drop this on him when he's not suspecting because he hasn't paid that much attention to what's going on in games. He'll just be like, why did you buy me this? I don't have time to play fucking video games. I'm like, just go down. You'll find it. You will find truth.
Yeah, it was fun that it became such like a weird like meme in certain circles of the indie game world. Like, is this Frog Fractions 2? Is that Frog Fractions 2? But then kind of when the game came out, it was like so widely kind of propagated, like, okay, here's what it is. Mm-hmm. And like, that's great. But it also kind of bummed me out because it's like, I wanted more people to discover this organically and be like, what the fuck? Like one of my good friends out here literally didn't know I wrote the music for Glitter Mitten Grove, was just tooling around Steam and wanted like a dumb fairy game and saw it and bought it, not knowing I composed for it and not knowing it was Frog Fractions 2. And I was like, are you fucking serious? And she was like, yeah, I played it for like 6 hours before I knew you were a part of it and like several more before I found an entire other game inside of it. And I'm like, you are a treasure. Like this is
that is what you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I definitely didn't have the chance to be surprised. I found out what it was beforehand, but you know, I knew there was something up with frog fractions before I played it. It didn't make it any less magical.
Did you find the developer shitpost dungeon?
No. Okay. I gotta do more with that game. Bottom line.
There's basically, I won't spoil it, but there's point in the game where we developers kind of, everybody on the team was able to put like a personal message in.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is the kind of thing where I encouraged people who disagreed with mine to come to Seattle and fight me in real life. And I can always, and I can tell people who've gotten there because I got like some serious and some not serious threats. Like, it's nothing offensive. It's just an opinion I have about a beloved thing that I don't like, and that's a dangerous thing to do on the internet. And so it's fun every now and then. It's like, I'll get somebody just humorously being like, coming to PAX, I'm going to kick your ass while I'm out there. And I'm like, oh, this person.
Please do it. Please, please try it. Please. That would be a fun story for Reddit.
That somebody flew out to Seattle to like put my head in a toilet.
Yeah. TIL. That people are stupid enough to fly to PAX to put my head in a toilet.
I was on the fence about PAX, but
this one figured out I'd be able to stick it to this clean dexter. Really
pissed me off.
This tasty nerd didn't like a thing I liked.
Tim, you mentioned Glitter Mitten Grove. I'm just like scrolling down the games that you've worked on, Ryan, and it's like, you know, West of Loathing. I fucking loved that game. Shining, oh, that was a really cool game. Gunpoint, that was a really cool game.
So good.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm like a big lucky idiot that I get to do this job that's like literally my dream job, and like that I've actually worked on stuff that people seem to dig. It's like, I'm not trying to be like fake humble. Like it's generally like, I wake up sometimes and I'm like, what the fuck? Like when is the like karmic hammer going to hit me for this? You know, maybe it already has. Maybe it's the fact that I have like the biggest fucking glasses on earth. And like, as I told Joe before, like routinely do stupid things like bake plastic cutting boards in the oven.
Oh yeah, we got to get to that story. You told me that a couple of days ago when we were chatting about setting this up.
You're not going to make me do this.
Yeah,
I will do it.
Yeah, I am. Did you find the picture, by the way?
I was not able to. My parents are literally visiting right now. They're out here, and I was not able to because it was in the time before like camera phones were like huge. It was when they were around, but like I was in high school still.
Yeah.
So I was not able to find photographic evidence of this, but I'll just have to paint you a word picture. Of my shame.
Just like use MS Paint and draw a picture of it. Just because I need some kind of picture for the YouTube version of the show.
I mean, I can do that.
That would be fantastic.
It'll look about as shitty as the real life thing. So.
But anyway, this story, we got to hear this story.
Fucking A. Okay. Well, when I was a teenager, so I have three younger siblings. And when I was a teenager, I get home from high school, and this makes my parents sound like deadbeats, and they're not. They're wonderful, but they would often be out. My dad would be working, my mom would be running errands, and it was kind of on me to just make sure my siblings didn't die for an hour or two right after school. And the easiest way to do that is to just like throw in a frozen pizza, like put this in your face holes, losers. And I would do that. And I was not, I'm trying, like, if you hear the wheels cranking in my head, it's because I'm trying to find a way to tell this story that doesn't make me sound like a colossal idiot, and there's like no way to do it.
It doesn't exist.
Embrace the idiocy. I'm
trying to find a way to like work around it. Like, well, we just see it from my point of view, but I can't. So anyway, I take a frozen pizza, and I put it on what I thought was, because I was not paying attention at all, this black kind of cookie sheet, which cookie sheets are made of metal. Metal can go in the oven. That's going to be important later. instead, what I actually put it on was a like black plastic cutting board that I had never seen before that my mom just bought. I know plastic and metal are different fucking things. And in retrospect, it was an incredibly different item than the cookie sheet that I wanted, but I wasn't paying attention. An important teenager bullshit to do. And so I just put it in the oven. And then I come upstairs at the appropriate, like 15 minutes later, and there's just a plume of black smoke, like hexes from Fern Gully, just fucking rising into the kitchen. And I'm like, oh no. And I open the oven, and this like Lovecraftian horror is inside, because the what's happened is that the pizza has sunk down into this molten shelf of plastic now. and it's completely submerged. Like, there is a pizza in there somewhere, but it's covered in molten plastic. Also, the plastic has kind of dripped down in these long kind of stringy tendrils between the grates of the like oven rack. So I turned the oven off and I shut the door, and I kind of like, before the secret was really a thing, I tried to like will into the universe a life where I didn't do this. And it didn't work. And when the oven cooled down, literally this fossilized plastic pizza is fused to the fucking oven rack, and these strings of like now solidified half melted plastic are just frozen in time, kind of like stretching down from this. And so I'm like, oh, and I try to like dislodge the fucking pizza. I can't. It's part of the oven now. Everything's ruined. I think
become one.
I really fucked up bad. And the worst part was, at this point, my mom, who's going to be home soon, knew that I had like some kind of group project at school that I had to go meet my group. So there was going to be like a 10 to 20 minute overlap of when I left and my siblings were just kind of on their own. Like, they'd be fine. They weren't, like, you know, babies or anything. And so I couldn't think of what note to leave her to explain what happened, because I'm going to be gone and she's just going to see this. So I literally just, in my panic, wrote, "Mom, I fucked up. Sorry." And then, like, left and didn't leave any context. And so she was like, "I fucked up," and, like, couldn't figure out what had happened until she opened the oven and saw all the shame I had birthed onto the world. And it was one of those things where, like, if you've ever done something like so stupid that the person you affected like isn't even mad at you, because it's like, this is so dumb, it's like an achievement. You know, that's kind of how she reacted. She's like, "This is so fucking stupid, I'm not even angry at you.
I'm not disappointed. I'm just really impressed."
I'm baffled and impressed. And so she made me, as punishment, which, joke's on you, Mom, you can't punish somebody who already has no shame. She made me take this entire oven rack with the plastic pizza disc fused to it to school and, like, make people sign it. So that
just sounds like fun.
No, I enjoyed it. She was just like, "I guess this is punishment, but, like, fucking whatever at this point. Like, you are so stupid that, like, this won't wound you at all, but you might as well do it." So somewhere in my parents' house in Minnesota, there's still an oven rack, like, in a closet somewhere with this pizza circle and, like, a bunch of, like, in chalk, like, signatures all over it.
I just I love the fact that my friend Doc is in chat just posting pictures of, like, pizzas and ovens that weren't on racks. So they're just, like, cheese pouring through to the bottom.
That was like a mushroom cloud. That's
and
very
like
good.
One that just like exploded in the. I'm gonna have to, since you couldn't find your picture, I'm gonna have to use one of these, I guess.
I think that's. I mean, like, basically that one that's on the screen, except black and unholy and and solid. By the time it
ends. I like that mushroom cloud one. That is pretty special.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that might have to be the image for the episode.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, so like I don't know if you guys remember, there was this like dumb Twitter meme that was going around for a little bit that was like, it's like a picture of a teapot for some reason. And it was like, one like equals one fact about myself. You guys remember that?
Okay.
Everybody was doing that. And I was like, all right, I'll participate in this. But I changed the image to say like, one like equals one crushing embarrassment about myself. And like the pizza fossil thing was like one of, it got up to like 130 at one point. And like, It got to the point where I like made myself sad. I was like, wow, I still have more examples of me being this big of an idiot. Like, I should have bottomed out by now, but I'm not. I could keep going. So like the pizza oven rack was just one of like an infinite catalog of like oopsies that I made.
Little oopsies, you know, whatever.
I love that we're just getting stories in chat now. Dark Mika said, "When I was in high school, I used normal soap in the dishwasher. Always fun."
Ooh, then, I've done that.
And then Eternal Rage, Cole Martin says, "When I was pregnant with my number three, I had a dumb moment and I turned on the oven, but I forgot that I had stashed a bag of chips in there to keep the dogs from tearing into them."
Oh, shit.
"Melted plastic and burnt tortillas everywhere. Pregnancy really brain is a special thing. I've put milk in cabinets and controllers in freezers."
That's fucking incredible. And you can, the great thing about that is you can blame that on your kid on number three. Like, "You did this to me." "You made mommy do this." Like, that's awesome. That's okay. Yeah. Fantastic. The chat is making me feel a little bit better, but like only a little. Cause
well, I mean, I don't think anyone else had 130 crushing embarrassments to go through.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's bad.
What are some other good standout crushing embarrassments of your life?
Oh my God. So like, well, I mean, fuck, it's like, where do I start? So like, for example, when my wife and I, we got married right out of college, and then we moved to California, to the Bay Area, and we were in our first like dumpy, crappy apartment. And we were kind of desperate for new friends because we just moved to this new area. We didn't know anybody. And we kind of had a hard time finding anyone. And then finally, like this guy, roughly our age, who looks like he's also going to grad school at the same place we were, moved in the apartment across the hall from me. So I'm kind of like stalking this guy, basically like, fuck yeah, like this is, we're going to be friends with this person. I know it's going to be great. And what happened was I was in the middle of making burgers, like preparing like hamburger patties for dinner later. And this guy comes over. We haven't had a chance to meet him yet. He comes over and he's like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. Can I borrow a plunger? Do you have a plunger? And I'm like, sure, of course. And I'm totally cool about it. But in my head, I'm like, hell yeah. Like I have the like social high ground now. Like I can't fuck this up because I already know what he needs that for. So like, this is my conversation to screw up basically. So I give him the plunger and then he comes back. After using it, he's like, oh, thank you so much. It's so embarrassing. And he extends his hand. He extends his hand to shake my hand. And I have just been working with raw meat at this point. So if you were in this situation and somebody wanted to shake your hand, and you'd been working with like gross food, you would probably say something normal like, oh, I'm sorry, I was just making burgers, or I'm sorry, like my hands are gross right now, let me wash them, or anything a normal fucking human being would say. And instead, the words that came out of my mouth, and I was like, oh, stop it, but it was too late, was, I'm sorry, man, I was just massaging my meat. It's like, and he just, like, looked at me, and his hand is, like, frozen in the air, and he went, huh. And then he left, and I never fucking saw him again.
Like, oh, no.
Like, he lived across the hall from us, and I never saw him again.
Oh,
and
my God.
My wife gets home, and she's like, oh, you met that guy? And I'm like, I fucked up real bad. We can't be friends with him.
I fucked up, man.
So not
game
great.
Over. Game over, man.
Not a great first impression. I met one of my kind of writer heroes. You guys know Patrick Rothfuss wrote, like, The Name of the Wind, if you know the book?
No, I don't.
No, I'm sorry.
He's a fantasy writer I really like.
Sure, okay.
And I partially really like him because in those books, the main character like is a musician. And even though he's not a musician, he writes really well what it's like to kind of be a big dweeb about your instrument and care about it and stuff. So it was really cool. And At one PAX, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go meet him at this autograph signing thing. And earlier that day, I don't chew gum. Like, I haven't chewed gum in like fucking 10 years on either side of this event, basically. Like, it's pointless. Like, when the flavor's gone, like, now I just have garbage in my mouth. Cool.
No.
And so somebody handed me like a piece of Trident gum at one point, and for some reason I just chewed it. And then when I was done earlier in the day, I wasn't near a garbage can, so I spit it back in the wrapper and kind of folded that up in my pocket. And then I'm in line to meet Patrick Rothfuss and have him like sign my Kindle. I don't have a physical copy of the book.
How modern.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask him, like, I want to ask him, like, how did you get to this place where you wrote this musician character so well if you're not a musician? And I reach into I have my hand in my pocket and I reach it out and I discover for the first time in front of him, and he definitely notices that, like, gum, like, white gum is just, like, webbed between all of my fingers. So I look like a complete, like, jackass. And
oh,
he did this
God.
Thing where he was like, oh, like he kind of like looked at my hand and he was like, oh fuck, this person's crazy. They're going to kill me. And like he recovered, but like basically I met like one of my heroes, like with garbage all over my fucking hand. So, you know, first impressions.
And now you have his skin in your basement.
Now I wear him like a suit. That's why he hasn't finished the third book.
There we go. All, yeah. We're getting all the answers, the breaking news in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord. Well, I know we've been chatting close to an hour now. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about? I know you didn't have too much time tonight.
I can hang up for a bit longer.
I promised Dark Souls fan fiction.
Well, Tim, give us some Dark Souls fanfic.
No, he said he had the stuff. No, I'd assume you play way too much Dark Souls like I do.
You're hovering your finger over a button labeled ruin the podcast right now. like asking me about Dark Souls, because it's like I have literally trapped people with me on planes. Like my friend Akash Thakkar, who's the sound designer for Hyperlight Drifter. I don't know why I just name dropped him, but I just think it's cool that he worked on that because he's very good.
Yeah, it's
and
a cool game.
We were on our way to PAX South to give a talk, and I had been kind of talking about how I just discovered Dark Souls and how great it was and the way it tells stories and blah, 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 blah. And I was trying to get him into it, and basically what I did was I just trapped him on a plane between me and the aisle, and then also another third bystander who by the end of this was literally like trying to claw open the fucking window to just get in. And by the time we landed, he was like, Dark Souls is great. And now he's like as much of a like dirtbag about it as I am. So
yeah,
that's really what it takes. It's just flat, trap somebody in a metal tube in the sky with you and you can make them love anything. If it's that or death, you know,
you can make them love.
It's pure insanity.
Oh, my Lord.
They either accept it or they go hollow.
Right. You get it. Talking to me is a metaphor for the slow entropy of the end of all life. Yeah.
And that's why you are perfect on this show.
I guess.
Oh, boy. Oh, my Lord.
No,
so what other fun projects do you have in the works? Do you do original music as well? Do you put albums out? Do you do, I know a lot of friends that we have on the show do video game covers. Do you dabble in that at all?
Yeah, I do some of that. So like by original music, you mean like stuff not connected to games, right?
Yeah. And that just putting out albums of original music.
Technically creating music for games. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I'm... Non-game original music.
I try. It's more like I have so kind of, I usually have so many projects kind of going at a given time that like I tend to not have enough time to like dabble outside of it. So one of my big goals for 2018, I have some like piano. I'm a pianist, so I have a lot of like piano YouTube covers of stuff, and I'm trying to get that going again. But right now, like honestly, almost everything, it's literally been like finish West of Lothian, on to the next thing. Like finish Where the Water Tastes Like Wine. Like I've got two projects right now that I'm super excited about, and it's not interesting for your audience because I can't talk about what they are yet.
Yeah,
but, nothing but you can like, talk about.
I don't know. I think I can talk about. No, I can't.
Maybe err on the side of caution.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not trying to be a tease, but I just had like a flash forward to the future where. In real time in this Twitch chat, like I get fired from this project for talking about it. So, yeah.
I see
so
a red laser on your forehead right now. So,
perfect. So, unfortunately, I can't say anything about it yet, which is boring as hell for your audience. So, I apologize. But, yeah, no, like I like doing piano YouTube covers. I do a lot of, like when I can, like remixes for friends. That's a big thing. And indie game music is like all, you know, all these composers that kind of know each other. So, it's like, hey, I just finished an album. Like, will you do? I'm getting a bunch of people together to do like remixes of this, you know, can we get that going? And I always think that's really fun that somebody would trust me with their work. That's a big mistake. So, yeah. So I mean,
any big game remix albums that you've been on? Anything recent?
Yeah. So I've done stuff with a kind of musicians collective called Materia that has hundreds of members in the game.
They
do all this. They do this really great stuff. They got a StarCraft album that I didn't have time to do anything for, but it's going to be awesome coming out really soon. But I did like a Final Fantasy VIII remix for something they did. I did. I'm like literally blanking on the work that I've done. What the fuck is going on? So like nothing recent. Because again, I feel like I'm being like so boring right now. But it's really just it's been so kind of nose to the grindstone. For game music stuff. And then like also I tried a fun new thing with Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, where once the music was actually done, I tried to like promote it at all. So that's been taking a lot of my time because I'm actually trying to like market it after it's done instead of just being like, yeah, I finished it and then moving on to another thing.
Well, I think mission accomplished for promoting it on this show.
Yeah, I did say the name of it a couple of times. So really,
yeah.
Like I said, mission accomplished.
Yep.
All good.
I'm crushing it right now.
So we probably should promote it a bit. Where can people find the album? Where can people find your music?
Oh, well, that's very sweet. So literally, if you just Google our absurdly long title, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine soundtrack, you'll find it on Bandcamp. You can also go get there directly by going to waterwinemusic.com. And you can grab a digital copy there. It's $10, but you can listen to all the tracks all the way through on Bandcamp for free. They're also on YouTube. They're on SoundCloud. Like, I don't want it to, like, I would love it if people support my work and the work of all the musicians who really, you know, like, busted their ass to help me do this. Like, it means a lot, but I don't want it to be a barrier for people. Like, this is the first game soundtrack where I put the entirety of it up on YouTube. Mm. Usually I put a few selections and stuff, but this is like, if money is a barrier to you being able to hear this, then I just want you to be able to hear it anyway. So it's on YouTube and Spotify and all that stuff. But yeah, if you go to Waterwine Music, you can definitely like listen to it and pay money for it if you want. We also have a vinyl edition that is fucking gorgeous, which I can say.
I was just going to ask if there were any physical versions.
Yep, there's a vinyl that you can, on the same Bandcamp page, you can grab that. It comes with a digital download of the soundtrack and also a download of the game. So you kind of just get the whole package.
Nice.
And our 2D artist Kellen Jett did this just incredible. You can see like pictures of the vinyl up on the Bandcamp page as well. Just did this like really amazing kind of themed art for it. And it looks rad as hell, and it makes me angry because I don't know how visual artists fucking do anything. Oh look, I thought of a thing in my head, and now it's real. Like, cool. What's that like? I don't know. I'll never know. Like.
That's okay. I don't know how people make music. I'm equally vexed by that.
Okay. That makes me feel a little better. Yeah. I feel that way about visual art. Anytime like I see somebody being good at it, which is basically all Twitter is for me now. It's just like, how do you make your, I can't make my dumb crab claw hands do that. Like if I tried for a million years and you can just like draw shit. So anyway, Kellen's great. Despite the fact that I just spent all that time like yelling at him for being good at a thing. Like the cover art for the game, I think is phenomenal.
I just want to say that vinyl looks fucking gorgeous.
Yeah,
it looks really
good. Yeah, thank you. It's
two records set, the copy of the game, the digital copy of the soundtrack, fancy packaging, $35. Really? That's it?
Yeah. It's kind of like, especially, yeah, when the game is, I believe, 20.
Yep.
Like, I don't think we're making any money on that thing. We just want it to like exist. So
and yeah. Is that right? There's only 100 of these being made.
Yep. They're a limited printing because making like 1,000 vinyls or something. Yeah. is a good way to go bankrupt. So it's just kind of a limited run thing.
And, need $35 really, really quick. Quick. Everybody in chat sub to me right now. Everybody just do the $25 subs. Like, I'll upload the music if you want. I'll just pirate everything.
Yeah. I'll just throw them on the bus right here.
Hey, you already said you want people to just hear the music. So that's everything in the clear, right?
Yeah, that'll hold up in court for you for sure.
Drop all your bits. Give me the subs. I want to get this fucking vinyl. I'm going to have to get that. That is an awesome looking vinyl. And the fact that the game comes with it, Jesus, man.
Yeah, it's... I'm pretty fond of it. I have to buy a fucking record player now, though, because I don't.
Are you going to be shipping them out, or is another company going to be handling the shipping?
Yes, so there's a company in the UK, I believe, called Laced Records is actually the one handling shipping that out to people. So, which is really, really good because they've been awesome to work with, and also because if it was up to me to ship out records to people who paid for them, it would be a fucking disaster. Like, I can't get to the bank before it closes. Like, this, it would be really bad. You don't want me in charge of that. Like, so yeah, so that they take care of that, thank God. And I don't have like piles of vinyls in my house that are like my job to get to people who want them, because that would be a real
I'll do
job.
It tomorrow.
Exactly. Or never, maybe. Like, I have this fun thing where like there'll be something I need to clean up, and I'm not a messy person, but I'll be like, there's like, oh, I need to wash that pan. It's being really stubborn, so I've just left it sit out for a while. And like, if I do bypass that enough times, it just becomes part of my environment. And then it's like, well, I don't have to wash that. That's just always there. And like, that's what would happen with the vinyls, is I would start out like having to walk over them to get into my living room. And eventually just be like, yeah, that's just how my house is. Like, part of it's made of records. That's just how it is here.
That's just how life is now.
Right.
Come to terms with it. It's just, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. Oh my Lord. Holy hell. But man, I know we have been chatting for a while now. We probably should wrap this up. There is still more show to go. Ryan, it has been fantastic having you on. You are a funny, funny dude.
I'm okay. I have moments.
Don't build him up.
I'm trying to build him up so that he comes back on again sometime.
I'm honestly baffled anytime I get invited back to a place where I've spoken out loud before and they're like, come back and do it more. Do more of that. And so like, yeah, sure.
Well, your funeral. You're already booked for 420. That's gonna happen.
Oh boy. In like I'm not clear on that. Is that the 420th episode or the episode you do in April on the 20th? Because yeah,
both. Well, why not?
Okay. Great. It's good.
Full episode 420 from the future.
Oh god, that'd be funny. No, we'll just get you on twice. So you're booked twice, once on April 20th, and then again whenever the fuck we record episode 420.
Awesome. So when we're all heads in a jar.
Yes. Yes. It'll be good.
Yeah, no, I would genuinely, it's been super fun talking to you guys, and I know you have more show to do, so I'll get out of your hair, but like, yeah, I would love to come back. Unless you come to your senses and you go like, oh, we talked forever.
Oh, no, I don't come to my senses. That's never going to happen. But cool. Ryan, it was fantastic having you on. Tim, always good having you on as well. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to some music from Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, because we have a very special exclusive version of Vagrant Song that we're going to play.
Ooh.
In that nifty. In that nifty. Do you want to tell us about that version of the song?
Sure. Yeah. So the version you hear in the game when you're in like the deep South, so like Alabama, Louisiana area, my guitarist and singer, Joshua Duchesne, did this really kind of understated, like folk performance that you hear in the game. And it's got this Southern affect to it, but it's not like super cowboy-y or anything. And I think it's really great. But the original one, which I also liked, that you're going to hear here, this is like his first take at it. And he just does it. It's the same song, but he does it a lot more like in kind of a character voice. So he sounds a lot more like a folksy kind of, you know, traveling like Southern dude. I don't know. But yeah, he sounds different. He's this fucking vocal polymorph. He's like, he's on the soundtrack multiple times. Every time you hear guitar, that's him. But he also sings multiple songs and people don't know it's the same guy because he can just like sound different when he feels like it. It's crazy. So yeah, that's what that is.
That's really cool. Well,
sounds he should be on a watch list.
He's
not trustworthy.
Like, no, he's in Magneto's like Brotherhood of Mutants. Like he needs to be like
Vocalore.
Yes.
Oh man. So we are gonna listen to that song and we will be back with more show. Ryan, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
Oh god. Like something profound?
Well, I'm gonna scrawl my name on the bare bones of the earth. I'm gonna dig my heels into the ground. 'Cause when that ferryman comes for to tally up my worth, I won't leave much to find that can be found. I'm gonna heft my spade up upon my wearied back. I'm gonna keep last rites tucked in my soul. 'Cause when my coals burn low and my trains run out of track, won't be no one else to dig my hole. I'm cool. I'm gonna cast my stones o'er the waters of this land, and by I'll see them far and long. And when the night come down for to take me hand in hand, this will be my tale, my vagrant song. Yeah, this will be my tale, my vagrant song.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Still plenty of show to go, some reviews to take care of. And normally this is the point where I would bring in either Chris Taylor or Pernell Vaughn, but fuck it. Let's bring them both on. Chris, Pernell, how are you guys doing?
Yeah.
It's daylight savings. Kill me.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, I'm great. Great.
Daylight slayings.
Oh, God. That would be a good horror movie. That really would.
Quite murderous. Actually, it might already exist for all we freaking know. That name is too genius to not have been done before. Someone out there, like, freaking Sweden has done it.
Daylight slayings time. It gives a new meaning to killing time. Rated PG-13, starring Rob Schneider.
Sun's down. Knife's up.
This is taking a dark turn.
Anyway.
Knife's down.
Anyway, we do have a handful of games to talk about, and I figure since you guys are always on so much, you might as well just do a big group thing and have a good old fun time together.
Hooray!
Passing giraffe.
What about a giraffe?
You have one. You promised it.
Forgot.
Tap dancing giraffe. You had shoes, shiny tappy shoes. I was ready. I wanted to hear it tap. I wanted to hear it, whatever, make that sound giraffes make.
That sounds like absurd humor. And you know what else has absurd humor? Segway. First game to talk about tonight is called Pit People, developed and published by The Behemoth. Released March 2nd on Xbox One and Steam for $14.99 out of early access and game preview. A full cast of tragically unique heroes will rise together from the pit. Master your destiny as you plot their course of action across an apocalyptic wonderland. Pernell, tell us, what is this game?
Fucking bizarre.
Well, it is The Behemoth.
I mean, no, even from Behemoth standards, I feel like this one kind of sets a new precedence. And I mean, I've played, you know, a good shot of their games. I've played Alien Omnid and Castle Crashers and Battle Block Theater. I think this one's sets a new standard for them, which is a good thing. Because you always kind of find yourself wondering, will this be the game where they stop being funny? Will this be the game where they become dry and bland? No, they just raised the bar. Nice. So this is I want to call it a strategy tactical game, but it would be selling the game ingenuously. It's more of a chaotic tactics battle game because the logic is that you have a series of characters that are on a map, hexagon style, and there's a bunch of opponents who are on a map, hexagon style, and you get into a clash session. And each turn, you pretty much move characters around the map in however fast you want based on their movement range. And when you stop and let the round take on, the enemies attack or heal or buff whoever they want as long as they're in range. Like you can't tell them what to do. You can only hope they do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the enemies, I'm not quite sure if they're running on a sort of metric like that or if they are actually being more concise on who they target, but what I do know is that battles get really weird.
That is an understatement, sir.
Yes, it is. Actually, you said you dabble in this too, right? Because if you did, I got a question that maybe you might have figured out that I did not.
Okay,
so party members have hit points. All your little characters have their little hit point bar in the corner there. But there's also team hit points or something. I have never paid attention to that, so I don't know if I should be or not. I've just been knocking dudes out and moving through battles. But have you noticed anything in regards to that?
Not really, because I kind of did what you did, where I would just, you know, I like playing games on easier difficulties, mm-hmm. because, you know, I don't have time to mess around with difficult games. So I just, I throw it on an easier setting, and I just wallop everybody.
Yeah, that's how I feel right now. Like, I left it at whatever default was, because there's something called Insane, which I did not bother with, but it seems like it's primarily focused around the pit anyway.
Yeah, I'm too old for Insane.
Well, I live Insane, baby. I'm cuckoo bananas. But it's essentially battles. I could see them getting tougher, even though I got pretty far into the game in and of itself. I did a lot of side quests because, God, you can't play this game and ignore the side quests. I'm sorry. The writing in this is genius. I think my favorite side quest so far is a series of quests involving one of those weird furry things that was in Castle Crashers. And it has a cool little detective hat on. He's constantly narrating the quest the whole time like a detective. Like, you know, like blueberries and blueberry shortcake. That dame was fresh. Fresh pastry hot off the grill, ready to buff my hit points at the drop of a hat. Man, I love that game. Just crazy shit like that. I made that up, but it sounds like some shit he would say.
Probably.
He
definitely
something related to cupcakes, because he usually has a crush on a cupcake. Which, by the way, cupcakes are people in this game. And it's I love it to death. They lick dollops of their own frosting at the other players to heal them. They actually use their own health by scooping frosting off their heads and throwing it at their friends to heal them. It is fantastic.
I mean, I would do that.
If I had a frosting, I'd be hoarding that shit. I'd be tasting myself all the time.
Wow.
That's right. I said it.
Well, so far, I'm hearing nothing but good, and that's basically all I've encountered with the game in my time with it. Do you have any negatives on this thing?
I did have one, though it might just come with maybe someone else not having the same gripe I have, which is that I feel like the UI at the house could use a little work. And what I mean by that is, though they do have bits and pieces here that kind of explain stuff, it wasn't descriptive enough to help me best decide what equipment to give my characters. So it did tell me things like, you know, small helmets can buff, give you, you know, more defense for the sake of dodging, and no helmet gives you all dodge, no defense. But then you open the window and there's like 15 helmets. And in some cases, they'll have like big icons that may make sense. And other times, they'll have icons that I have no clue what the hell they mean. It's just weird picture in the corner. Though I also think, I will admit, there is a book that I could have stood to use more often. But at the same time, I did not feel like it.
No.
So actually, I take that back. There it is. There it's in the book. So you'd have to bring up a book to do it. But at the same time, when I was looking at it at the house, I was like, what the hell is it? What's the point? Why even bother with this helmet over this helmet? So essentially, that can be a bit of an annoyance. It's not a game breaker. It's just something that kind of bugged me.
Well, UI could always be worked on.
That is true. That's true. But for the sake of what I'm getting out of the game, there is no freaking way I'd give up this game for the UI. Maybe they can fix the UI and make it better for me. I don't know. But I enjoy the game for what it is. It's kind of crack.
You want to know my favorite thing about Pit People?
What?
Is that even people who aren't good with turn-based strategy games or who are intimidated by them could get into it because of how easy the battle system is. And the fact that they have auto battles in the game if you want.
That is actually true. I have to agree with you on that. Because initially, I won't lie, before I adjusted to the gameplay, I was kind of miffed that I couldn't determine who to attack with what guy, and that there was no list of skills or abilities that people had. Like, you know, typical strategy RPGs or strategy games in general, you pick a unit, you move them, and a lot of times you can say, okay, what of his moves or abilities do you want to invoke right now? The fact that none of those are in this game was kind of annoying, but that has benefits too. Like you said, it makes it easier for other people who aren't fluent with this type of game to come in and have fun with it and enjoy the humor and the world, which is what we're really here for. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, it also cuts down on the need for analysis paralysis, because I don't have to worry about what my skill loadout is for each guy. All I got to do is worry about the unicorn rides, scrubs his butt against the floor and shoots his horn at people. That's all I care about. And this guy, I don't even know what the fuck he does, but he has a wacky face, so he's getting in there. You know, it's just it's stuff like that. I mean, it it takes away a depth, but adds something more and adds something else in its stead. So it doesn't hurt the game. It just changes the game.
It's style over more substance. And it works in this case.
Yes, it does. Like, this game has been in pre-development early access for a long time. And when you mentioned, hey, you want to review this Pit People game? My first thought was, what do you mean, review it? Is it done? And you said, yes. And I smiled because I had been waiting for this game for a long time because I do like Behemoth and I do like the stuff they do. And for the record, one thing I like about the company as a whole, and it's displayed in full, is on full display in this game, is that they pretty much do what they want. I don't think they went to a bunch of focus groups for this game and asked, what do you guys want in the game? You tell us what will sell money. And there wasn't a PR guy coming in the office saying, you know what you guys need? A lot more blood in your games. It's violence. And it tests well in this group. You need to put this in. No. This game is absurd as shit. Everything about it is weird. You're running around on gumdrop planes. The narrator is constantly berating you on the map. The plot involves a space bear crashing into whatever planet you're freaking on. Everything's absurd. It rains bear blood. Nothing in this game would test well in a focus group. And I don't care because I want this game. I don't want what a focus group would approve. I want this.
Nice.
So the gameplay is fun once you get used to the style of tactics that it employs. The story is batshit crazy in a good way because you don't know what's going on half the time. I mean, it has a cohesive plot, but things are so weird as it takes place that you may well be lost even though you actually know what's going on. Again, a good thing.
So the only question left is $15. Is it worth the money and was it worth the wait?
Yes, on all counts. It was definitely worth it. And I look forward to what the heck they decide to do next.
I'm scared at what they'll do next.
I'm not going to lie, just to throw it out there. I don't care about Castle Crashers 2. I've heard that brought up a lot. Screw that. I'm already with another beat 'em up or something, but it doesn't have to be Castle Crashers. Just be whatever the hell you guys want. I just want more crazy antics and action in your games. That's it.
Indeed.
But if you make Pit People 2, Ceiling People, I'll play that.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Neon Wall, developed and published by Jandu Soft, releasing March 15th on the Switch for $9.99. Escape your way out of Neon Wall by solving puzzles and overcoming a variety of challenging levels. Over the course of the game, you will need a combination of skill, concentration, and precision to be victorious. Chris, what is Neon Wall?
Hey,
you're on.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, I started breathing in, and then I had to cough. And I was like,
ugh. That was all she wrote.
Yeah. So it's a good game. Worth it. Go buy it. Next.
All right. Next game. No, what is Neon Wall? Because I'm confused by this one.
Okay. It is a little interesting. Like,
screenshots do not explain it that well.
Yeah, and... it's nothing like the Caveman Warriors game that these guys also developed, which, by the way, has a cameo in the title screen movie sequence. So that's kind of cool.
Nice.
But okay, so what this game is it's basically a I'm going to say like a sort of cross between a rail shooter and like a kind of Marble Madness, if you will. But what you're given here, as far as the rail shooter goes, is you get two guns that are constantly on your screen, and each stick controls the gun, like the movement of it. And with either of the shoulder buttons, you then can shoot lasers. Okay, so what the game deals with is a kind of three-color sort of matching, like a part of the level. So, okay, your ball, which you have to get to the end of the stage, a la like Marble Madness. Mm-hmm. It comes down, and let's say the ball is green. Well, if that little section of this of the stage, which by the way are made up of laser cubes, kind of looks a little bit like Tron, which you can see from the screenshots. But let's say that the ball is green, the field is blue. The ball will sit there and just kind of spin and move very, very slowly. But if you, and then, you know, if the area in front of you is blue, that means that one laser is going to be green and the other is going to be red. They cycle like that. Whichever color the field is at that time, the other two colors are going to be on your laser somewhere. And so if you shoot the green laser and turn the field green, then the green ball actually moves really fast. And then it moves towards, let's say, a red section, while the red section is your right laser. So you shoot the ball again, and it turns red, and then it, you know, speeds through that section. And so it's kind of this keeping the colors consistent with the keeping the color of the ball consistent with the color of the stage. I might have said zapping the stage. It's zapping the ball. But you don't, in the first few levels, you don't actually even have to aim. You just have to, like, keep it in your mind that this needs to be the color of whatever it's running against. And they just keep mounting on different challenges. Like, if the stage is not... No, actually, I guess you do change the stage, don't you? I guess it depends.
I have no clue you played it.
Yeah, I know, right?
I didn't have a chance yet. It didn't release yet when we're recording this.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Anyway, I'm in a different level now, so they're not even using that mechanic anymore. I was going to look at it right quick.
Are you playing while we're doing other reviews?
I'm always doing that. Oh, I was playing Bleed 2 during the other review. but either way, it's getting the walls and the ball to match up, and sometimes that means, like, if the... You have to zap the right color in order to... create a bridge over a gap, and if you fall through the gap, you have to start over. And the game is very generous about that. It just starts down a little timer, and if you say to keep going, it keeps going. But you do eventually have to get over there, usually in an allotted amount of time. Sometimes there are sometimes obstacles in the way where you actually do have to aim one of the lasers and take care of that while the ball's still rolling. So then it becomes this juggling act of, like, shooting things that are in the way, changing the color of the stage, and keeping the ball from dropping through a hole, all in a certain amount of time. So it becomes pretty frantic pretty quickly.
This is like a manic game.
Sounds, yeah, really cool, too.
Yeah, yeah, it does get that way. And, yeah, music's exciting. The laser show's really cool, especially on, like, you know, a big screen or whatever. And, yeah, I mean, it's basically that kind of puzzle game, and it just keeps mounting. And then it has all kinds of, like, different modes that I can't remember what they are right now.
Nice. So so $10 on this one. What do you think?
Yeah, $10. This one's good. It's definitely for, like, fans of your Marble Madness style, like, action puzzle game. Yeah, actually, it looks like there's not a whole ton of options here. It's just mostly... You can choose your levels and replay them and things like that and try and beat your best time. And of course, like I said, it works really well with the, the Joy-Cons.
Joy-Con, yeah. Joy-Con trademark symbol.
Yeah, Joy-Con trademark symbol. But yeah, it's definitely for fans of, like, action puzzle games and people who like a good challenge and like a cool looking game. So go ahead and get it.
Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Next game is called Midnight Deluxe, developed by Petite Games, published by Rattleaka Games, released March 6th on PS4 and Vita for $4.99, and is crossed by March 8th on the Switch. In this golf-like game with a perpetual darkness setting, your task is to guide a little square-shaped fairy named Midnight. Use your skills to launch Midnight into the night sky, but watch out, the world of Midnight is a dangerous one. Pernell, what is Midnight Deluxe? Besides adorable.
I need to say right off the bat, right now, this is going to be that thing that people might say, why the hell would he say that? I don't care. So one day we're going to get a game that we're going to review, and it's going to be bad, like really freaking bad. I kind of had it in me that maybe this would be that game. I was like, this could be it. This could be the turd. No. No.
That's good to hear.
It is good to hear. It's a scary thing, man. I don't know how to explain it. I'll go on to the rant on it later, but for now, let's go about the game itself. So this game is essentially mini golf with a cube boy. Box boy goes golfing. That's how I describe it. So you're a little white square, or rather you're manipulating the trajectory of a little white square. And there is a square-like hole on every screen that you're on. And the object of the stage is to get Cube Boy into that square-shaped hole within a certain number of flicks. So what does it mean by flicking? Simple. You can hold the thumbstick out in any number of the directions, and based on how hard you press it and direction you press it, when you let off the button, the square will go flickering off into the distance. And essentially, it doesn't have much, I'll say, in the form of like rebound. Once it hits the wall, it generally falls or kind of does like a slight curve, but it doesn't really bounce around. Kind of like a golf ball, I guess, in that regard. But the goal is to essentially get the cube into the hole. Now, there are obstacles that flicker into some of the stage that will make it a little bit tougher to do that. Whether it's just the terrain itself in the form of tight gaps, narrow wedges, chasms that will ultimately lead to Cube Boy's death. And also other weird things like round fuzzy eyeball things or round fuzzy balls that have eyes on them. And if you whack them, they smile at you. Sometimes they'll just be kind of in the environment doing their own thing. Other times they will impede your progress by blocking the hole or routes to the hole. There are obstacles that will outright maim you, such as laser beams and buzz saws. There are cool, like, tilt-a-whirl platforms where when you land on it, it'll kind of spin you out of the way, and more. It's a surprisingly cool game. It feels like a 2D mini golf game.
It really does. I had a lot of fun with it myself. It's deceptively tough. Because each of the stages, you know, you're graded on the whole 3-star rating. Trying to get holes in ones on some of those courses is tough, and it's going to take a lot of tries.
It really is. Though, on positive, some of the levels, they honestly don't expect it, which I was glad to see, because some of those levels are impossible. Though I've also had a couple where I hit under their par. If there was one level where they expect you to do it in two, I did one because I didn't do the route that they wanted you to do. Like, it was a buzzsaw going back and forth, and it would occasionally stop over the hole. And then what they wanted you to do is go in the opposite direction and flick a switch to turn the buzzsaws off and then get yourself into the hole. But I said, screw that. If I time it right, the cube will land into the hole. I will go through the buzzsaws, land in the hole, and the level will end just before the buzzsaw kills me.
Nice.
So what ends up happening is the level does end, the buzzsaw does kill me, but the game will allow me to move on with the 3-star rating anyway. So it was a hole in one when it was meant to be done in three.
Nice. That's really good.
There was a lot of cool levels like that, and it does have the tried and true method of quick restarts. So you don't even feel like you're losing time for each time you have to start the level over. It kind of goes immediately in. Though I am kind of sad that it, I'm not sure if I'm sad or pleased by the fact that every time you restart the stage, it changes the music track too. Because if you're flicking and dying constantly, that music will be changing quite a bit on you. Like, doop, oh, doop, yeah. Doop. But considering the fact that I've had complaints on other games I reviewed on here where I felt like one music track drove me batshit insane, to have this problem instead, I'd rather have this problem. So
okay, you're not allowed to complain about too much music in the game.
Exactly. I'm good with this. If this is the option I get, I'll take it. But I'm still waiting for them to buck the trend on the 3 stars thing, though. Someone's got to do it. Can it be 5 cupcakes?
Well, for now, $5 on this one. What do you think?
I earned 5 stars on $5 out of 5 on this game. It was a worthy play. I worked extra hard to do it, they worked extra hard to do it. And it paid off for them. I had a great time playing this game. I had awarded $5.
$5 out of 5. That would be an interesting rating system where you rate it based on the dollars you would pay out of, like, oh, well, this game is $14.99. I give it a $13.50 out of $14.99.
To be honest with you, I am really bad at reviewing games based on numeric score. I actually would probably do a lot better at that.
It's 87 bitcoins out of 100.
Till tomorrow when my bank account tanks. But, like, it's something that, like, I feel like it would be easier. I mean, don't you guys? I mean, it's one thing to say, is it a 10 out of 10 game? Like, not really. Is it a 7 out of 10? Maybe, but I'd rather go, I had fun with this, but I wouldn't pay more than $30 for it. I had fun with this. Oh, you goddamn right, it's worth full price. Get that bad boy today at cost.
Nice.
You know, it's easier to push that logic, I think.
I agree. And, good stuff.
I'll stop rambling because we'll be here all day talking about Pernell's metrics.
Okay, so moving on. Next game is called Bleed 2, developed by Boot Disc Revolution, published by Digirati. This one came out March 8th on the Switch for $14.99. Bleed 2 welcomes back pink-haired heroine Rin, the world's greatest and only remaining hero, as she fights to defend the globe from an invading force of villains and tries to live up to her title as the greatest hero of all time. Chris, tell us about Bleed 2.
Well, first off, I like that it's greatest and only.
Yeah. <That's>, only remaining.
Yeah.
After number the first
one,
game.
Numerically speaking, I am the one number of... Okay, so Bleed 2 is, of course, a sequel to Bleed, which I talked about earlier, and I think we've all talked about at various points, apparently. And and yeah, the point of the first game was kind of No More Heroes style, go and defeat all of the former, or I suppose current, heroes in remission that are, you know, not really doing their thing anymore, and do it with style and very quickly, and you get, you know, better scores and things like that. Well, this game continues that. Basically, aliens invade, and so you have to go and defeat them, and you discover a new person who ends up being on your side and all this other stuff. So, like, it has a different type of story that's, I think, a little bit more maybe traditional. But that's not the point. The point is running and shooting and jumping and slowing down time, doing Matrix-style dodges and, like, cool stuff like that. So this is a side-scroller, which kind of utilizes a little bit of twin-stick shooting in the controls. The one stick moves your character. The other stick just constantly shoots a machine gun in whatever direction the stick is going in. You jump with the shoulder buttons. It actually... with the right shoulder button specifically, and you can without having to unlock anything Metroidvania style, you actually do get a triple jump built in. And then of course the left stick is what will slow down the time into like this kind of bullet time where you can like sit there and dodge, and if you're like jumping, you can change directions like as many times as you like and basically sit there and jump between bullets and, you know, take out the enemy and stuff like that. Really cool stuff. All that's in the first game. What the second game adds to it is a really cool, basically a short range weapon in the form of, like, I guess a laser katana of some kind. Speaking of No More Heroes. And so anything in the game that glows pink and gets shot at you, you can deflect with the katana. Anything from pink bullets if they're coming out of guns to entire bosses if they're like, yeah, if they like glow pink and they're like rushing towards you, you can bop them with the katana and send them flying. And so it becomes this thing where you're not only jumping, dodging, slowing down time and shooting, you're also deflecting mad amounts of bullets. And oftentimes the bosses will send like just this wall of bullets at you, but maybe half of them will actually be pink. So you can like jump through this barrage of bullets and like deflect like half of them back to the boss. And the game really is set up to utilize this quite often.
That's really cool.
Yes. The game moves a lot quicker than the first one, actually, and I think the soundtrack is hugely improved. It now sounds a lot more like just this, you know, heavy-hitting, like, Mega Man-style soundtrack. And the game moves also a lot like Gunstar Heroes. That is to say, stuff's just constantly happening. Bosses kind of just drop in. You end up, like, you know, on the tops of vehicles, like, running and jumping around and stuff, and then, like, suddenly one of the vehicles attacks you and, like, things like that. And, of course, it also maintains its, like, too-cute-to-kill sort of aesthetic. Not only is Rin the hero adorable, but, like, your, you know, enemies are all bobblehead-looking guys, and occasionally they're corgi ninjas, like little dogs with headbands and stuff that come after you, and it's just, like, all this awesome stuff. But, you know, obviously the goal is to take it all out. And, the game also has a really neat way of rating you. This is also in from the last game where if you let's say, like, defeat a bunch of enemies or do a really good job on a boss without getting hit, like, you see the little meter on your score actually go up. And so you get to see how the game ranks you in real time. You don't just have to wait till the end of the stage to be like, oh, that was a great job, you got a D-.
Oh, like, that's actually really cool.
Yeah, so you actually do get a sense of how the game rates you, and so you can work towards replaying those levels and getting that meter all the way up to, you know, an S rank, which I actually was able to achieve on one stage, but on easy mode.
Oh, nice.
But it can be done. These are achievable goals. And it also has 4 difficulty levels. I'm told it has 2-player, but I couldn't find that. So maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But
could be an unlockable thing, maybe?
It could be, yeah, because I can definitely tell early in the game there's some other characters they're introducing that look like they're going to be playable later. Mm. So maybe that's something. But yeah, Nintendo's actual site says it's a 2-player game. So apparently it's 2-player eventually.
But overall, $15 on this one. What do you think?
$15, definitely get it. It's for side-scrolling action platformer shooter fans, which I think that's all of us.
Yeah. Well, if someone hasn't played the first one, should they start with the first and then go to 2? Or do you think it's okay to start with 2?
No, it's absolutely fine to start with 2. And in fact, if you're going to choose between the two, just go ahead and skip the first one, go to the second one, because it's improved in almost every way. And the sword mechanic is super fun. Like, I thought the first game was easily one of my top 10 for, you know, the first, what would you call it, I guess, year of Nintendo Switch. Yeah. Are we in the second year now?
I think somewhat close enough.
I think we are, yeah.
Yeah, the first game is in my, like, top 10 of, like, indie games, and this one has easily blown it out of the water. So if you have to choose between the two, go ahead and do the second one. If you can afford both, get both, because the first one's still great.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called Spiral Splatter, developed by Neon Chimp Games, published by Sometimes You, released March 13th on Xbox One and Switch for $4.99. Spiral Splatter is a brain-bending arcade puzzle game that will push your hand-eye coordination to the limit with non-stop mind-boggling puzzles. Stay calm, relax, and see if you can take on Spiral Splatter. Purnell, tell us about this one.
This goddamn game. I reviewed it.
That's me every time I review them.
This I don't understand. This game, okay, it's not a bad game, but there's something about it where I honestly feel like if you suffer from any, and I mean any modicum of anxiety, don't even try. Just don't play this game. I reviewed this on the Vita and had forgotten about it. And then when I reviewed it on here, those first few, god damn it. So what am I talking about? Simple. If you've heard of a game called Irritating Stick, well, that's this game, but with a spiral splatter ball. If you haven't heard of Irritating Stick, you are a white orb traversing very narrow passageways to get to the other side. And in the process, you also have to occasionally flick switches or dodge obstacles or what have you. Every time you get near the wall, the screen flashes red and makes a buzzing sound. And when you crash, it makes an explosion sound and leaves a mark on the wall. And then you start over from where you left off, whether it was the beginning of the stage or if you reached a checkpoint, you start at the checkpoint. If you didn't reach a checkpoint yet and you died, the clock resets to 0 and it's pretty much like getting a fresh run on the level. But if you've hit any of the checkpoints and then you die, you start at the checkpoint, but the clock is ticking and it doesn't stop. So if you're going for 3-star ratings, you essentially don't get to use the checkpoint zones at all. You have to knock them out in one go.
Did you say 3 stars?
You better believe I fucking did. Every 3 goddamn stars. You start calling them dingery doos or something. I don't know. It's the same message across, and it's more creative than stars. So you're essentially, if you have that fever in typical games where you're constantly redoing levels to get the 3 dingery do rating, you're going to find yourself curled up into a ball in the corner of the damn room wondering why a developer thought to do this to them. Because quite frankly, it drives me crazy. It's not a bad game. It's just I can't play it for long stretches of time or even barely short ones without losing my shit. So
I can attest to that. I put in a chunk of time on the Xbox version. I'm probably only about halfway, maybe two thirds of the way through the game. But the main reason is because I can't move on until I 3-star a level.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just keep going over and over. Like, no, I could shave off 4/10 of a second. I can do this if I just cut this corner a little tighter, if I speed up down this way. Oh man. Pretty
That's
much.
What happens. That's the game at that point. Just constantly putting you in a sense of PTSD.
I think it's awesome though, especially for only $5. If you ever heard of Irritating Stick and you know what it is and you are okay with the concept of that, for $5, this is going to be a lot easier than actually finding Irritating Stick.
Mm-hmm. That is very true.
So would you say this game is more anxiety inducing or PT?
Oh, God.
Honestly, if I had legitimate PTSD issues, I could perceive this game triggering them. I genuinely could. That's not even me being happy-go-lucky, wacky man on the show. That is me saying, I believe this could get a guy freaking the fuck out.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that would be tough. It's, you know, comparing Spiral Splatter to PT is like comparing apples to floating dead women.
Yeah, that's true.
That is very true. Well, that is actually very true. But I definitely think that just in the scope of if you're triggered by like loud noises and red flashing, like kind of like beratingly flashing at you, it definitely has that in this game. Like, I don't think it's going to happen to anybody truly going to need to see their shrink, but it will have you. Honestly, it makes me put the game down sometimes. Like, I will say that much. I have put the game down because I couldn't deal with it anymore for a little bit. So it definitely triggers something in me.
Pernell, your official verdict for $5 on this one?
I think it's at least worth trying, especially if you're okay with the stuff I'm describing. The game itself is solid. It's a fun game.
I'll go a step further because it's cheap enough. I think this is fuck it. Why not? It's cheap enough that, you know, it's worth trying and it's cheap. So fuck it. Just get it.
Give it a shot.
But we got one final game with you guys to talk about, and that is called Super Toy Cars, developed and published by Eclipse Games. Released March 2nd on the Switch for $9.99. Super Toy Cars is an arcade tabletop combat racing game featuring fast and cool-looking cars, impressive tracks made of everyday objects, and a bunch of power-ups that will let you destroy your opposition. Chris, tell us more about Super Toy Cars.
All right, well, Super Toy Cars. So this one... this one reminded me a little bit of a game that I talked about time before last, called Rally Racers, where I talked about how it's, you know, fun sort of toy car, wacky situations, things like that. But I had complained about the frame rate issue of Rally Racers. Well, this game actually runs really smooth. I think that it has... somebody's phone's ringing.
I thought you were just playing a game right now.
No, I would have been, but I was like, that's why I was confused. I was like, wait, I'm not playing the game. Something else is happening. So yes, this one I think has much better production values. The graphics are much better. The frame rate is much better. The music in it is odd. It sounds like it's kind of 90s style guitar rock.
It's a band called the Spinwires, because I remember when we had Eclipse on the show way back when, the music came up and he mentioned that they're a band, I think he said from Buffalo, New York, called the Spinwires, and they've licensed music, their music out to like different shows and games, and they let them pretty much use all of their music in the game, which I thought was awesome.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It sounds like the soundtrack to this game is a CD from a band from one of the developer's friends. Like, it's like, I got a friend with a band, I'm going to play their CD for the soundtrack. Because it's not racing game music, you know? It's guitar rock, but not like fast guitar rock. It's just kind of like Okay. This sounds like the kind of music that somebody like back in the 90s would have been like, oh, you got to listen to these guys.
And I would be like, play their music this episode.
Yeah, do it. play the music. Specifically the music from this game. Okay, so apart from that, it's going to be the same kind of like deal with it. It's got the same controls. So your ZR, ZL button are your accelerator and brake, respectively, freeing up the face buttons to actually do things like, you know, use items that drop. One is interesting. The X button is an instant reset button. So that is to say, this game, a lot like my favorite racing game, Excite Truck, and also like Rally Racers, if you get trapped in a spot, then you can actually... the game will just kind of plant you back where you belong and let you keep going, but without the long, drawn-out animation sequence of, let's say, a Mario Kart. Like, it doesn't just ruin you. Like, yeah. You can actually make a mistake and get back in the race. And you can, anytime, you can push X and do that to yourself, which I found interesting, especially when I was trying to find a button to, like, shoot a weapon, which would be Y. And so, yeah, exactly. I did that a couple of times. And then an interesting thing about this one is that it has a speed up gauge that I suppose it fills up automatically anytime you're catching air with your vehicle, whether it's through jumping ramps or through drifting, which this game actually does feature drifting, like, you know, Sega Rally style, where you're just like cranking it all the way to the, you know, to the side to get around dangerous curves, of which this game has a few. and yeah, when you do that, your gauge fills up and you can use it once it's full. So it's one of those things where it's like if you just caught a little bit of air, then you're just sitting there with the half full bar and you don't get to use it. And it's just kind of just sitting there like, hey, do another thing. This one, however, does not have any kind of stunts or anything like that. It doesn't have like different racers. You can only just unlock different cars. But the cool thing is, just about any time you go through a whole circuit of courses, you can choose, like, it basically gives you enough points to unlock the next thing. So unlike Rally Racers, this actually has, this does not have a steep, like, buy-in curve with upgrading your vehicles or unlocking new things. In fact, I've unlocked the third car already, which is a Volkswagen Microbus. And true to the vehicle, it has zero turning radius. It's impossible to use. Like, you can't even drift with it. It's like, you start to turn it, and it's just like, So, it's actually kind of funny that they've even included that. But yeah.
I'm very happy to hear that it performs well on the Switch. We covered this quite a while ago on Xbox One when it first released, and I really enjoyed it back then. I enjoyed the soundtrack. I thought it was cool to hear such a unique soundtrack in a racing game.
No, I think it's cool. It's just, it was funny. Like, I wound up turning off the sound effects and just listening to the tunes because I was like, what are these lyrics? These just sound like...
It's not something you usually hear in a game like this.
Yeah, it caught my attention for sure.
But, and, yeah, I'm glad to hear it runs well on the Switch for $10. What do you think of this one?
$10, yeah. I'd say that if you're looking for, like, you know, a Micro Machines style racing game with, like, bizarre, like, levels made of things like, you know, looks like the top of a desk, but not quite because it's gigantic and keeps recurring things, or like a toy box or like an ice cream store, I guess. And, you know, it's nice and challenging. There's like cool little cars to unlock and it's fun. You get weapons and drifting and stuff. I think overall, if you are more serious about your racing games and you like the better presentation and things like that, go with this one. However, if you're, I still think Rally Racers ended up being the more charming of the two games, but it does underperform. So it's kind of like, it's kind of a toss up. Like, if you prefer your more Nintendo 64 style racer with like stunts and weirdness, then, you know, maybe stick with Rally Racers. But if you can afford it, get both.
Sounds good. Well, Chris Purnell, thank you to the both of you for coming on and chatting about these games. I enjoyed having you on together. We should do this more often.
Yeah.
That may be arrangeable, boo boo.
Ooh, we could do our own Monday thing from now on. That'd be so neat.
Aw, best friends.
BFFs forever. Oh my gosh. So, either of you have any final thoughts to sum everything up so I could do my edit like usual?
hopefully you guys are faring better with DSL than I am, or DST than I am, but if not, get better.
I just want to read the three titles now as they appear on my Switch menu screen. Super Toy Cars Bleed to Neon Wall.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Blob 2, developed by Blitworks, published by THQ Nordic. It released February 27th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. Set a few years after the events of the first The Blob game, action in The Blob 2 revolves around another attempt to wipe all color individuality from Prisma City and its residents. It's up to the player to join the color underground and bring color back to the world. Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
Still, you know.
I'm glad you were so prepared for that I ask, how are you doing? It's just, I'm okay.
I still have this damn cough. So fuck you, Joe. I hate you so much.
You hate me. Who has a game vice because of me?
Me.
Yeah, bitch. So, tell me about The Blob 2.
Oh, okay, fine. Damn.
You could talk about the game vice when you do some mobile reviews.
Fine. Okay.
I'm keeping all of this. Oh, man.
We're going to have to edit that out.
Not at all.
Damn it. Okay, so you want me to talk about The Blob 2 at this point?
Yes.
Okay. So I had never played The Blob when it was first out, mainly because I didn't own a Wii. But then when The Blob 2 came out, like, myself and everyone else kind of forgot about it. So it's nice that it's getting a nice big re-release from THQ Nordic this time around. It's a... I guess the easiest thing to call it would be a platformer, although, I mean, it does have like some RPG elements, I guess you could say. I mean, like, you can add things to your character to make them more powerful, and stuff like that. And there is a co-op feature, which I didn't get to try out, which I don't believe was in the first one. But it pretty much the product description that you gave was pretty spot on. You run around, you're adding color either by jumping on stuff, like jumping on enemies, jumping on buildings, doing a bunch of switches, and stuff like that. And you have to avoid ink, and you have to avoid some enemies later on. But the main thing is that you're just trying to add color back into the world, which I've noticed is like this big theme with a lot of games that you have me review between Dye, Ink, The Blob. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just trying to brighten up your life and be more colorful instead of the gray, miserable, sad sack of shit that you are.
I do appreciate it. Cause I mean, like, you know, I do relate to the, oh God, what were they called? The Gradians or something. They're the little guys that you have to jump on. And, pretty much each level you just go through and you have to complete your objectives within a certain amount of time. And by coloring all of the buildings in a certain block, that will give you extra time. And then by coloring all the buildings, it will unlock the gradients from the area. Coloring them gives you more time to do all your kind of stuff. But in all reality, it's not all that necessary unless you're doing stuff for completion's sake.
Which a lot of people do. A lot of people go back. I'm one of those who... I played The Blob 2 when it first came out on the 360, and I had a lot of fun going back and just completing everything I could.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's part of the thing. Like, the game is very fun, and thankfully it changes things up with its puzzles before you start thinking that everything is just going to be a bunch of switches that you have to change up. But the main thing is that it got a re-release on the Xbox One and PS4. Because THQ Nordic upped the graphics on it to give it a full HD release. So the main thing is that you have to ask yourself, well, first off, you have to remember, did I play De Blob 2 back when it came out? And, you know, if you didn't, then I definitely recommend giving this a try. If you had played it on the Xbox 360 and you're okay with, you know, your Xbox 360 version, I don't know whether I'd really say that the upgraded graphics are really worth that $30 price tag, because it doesn't seem like they've really changed much else other than the graphics. A lot of early reviews of the old Xbox 360 PS3 version noted that the camera was having a lot of issues. Like, pretty much just the camera just sucks. I'm in agreement. The camera still sucks, and it's a pain in the ass to use. And I'm really surprised that they didn't actually, like, take the time to fix that with this HD release.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little bit disappointing, but...
I mean, we have to be fair. Cameras in 3D platformers are notoriously always pretty bad.
They can be, but it's just, I don't know. My thing is that to me, that $30 price tag is pretty steep.
Especially when the first one, they re-released it at 20. I was kind of expecting 20 on De Blob 2, but they went 30 with this one. I'm kind of confused on that.
Well, De Blob was only for the Wii, wasn't it? So it only got a... did they only just re-release it on the Switch or what?
No, it's on Xbox One.
The first one?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's on there for $20. We reviewed it on the show a while back.
Well...
if only you listen to the show, you ask.
I do listen to the show. I just don't listen to every single podcast.
You should.
Mainly, I like listening to hear myself talk.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Overall, I was going to say, this seems like a game that was more intended for a PS4 audience, because Xbox One gamers, you could just pop in the 360 version of De Blob 2 into your console, because it's a backward compatible title.
Yeah, but then wouldn't you're getting different achievements, though, so if you're an achievement whore like yourself...
True.
You know, then that's two sets of De Blob achievements that you get.
Very true, and I do like my De Blobs. I'm hoping that these re-releases do well enough that THQ Nordic decides to reinvest in the franchise, and maybe we'll see a new one. That's my hope.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about De Blob. There's definitely a lot of replay value to it. And it's a lot of fun to play. I do hope that they make a sequel, but as I was saying, like, for me, the $30 price tag is a bit steep. I'd be more okay with 20.
Yeah.
For it, like the first game, as you were saying, but, yeah, if you didn't play it the first time around, definitely check it out now.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, Jacob, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Any final thoughts to sum it all up?
No, not really. I was trying not to cough again, so I hate you.
Cool. All right, next up, we are going to talk about some DLC for Real Farm, and to join us for this one, our resident farmer, Cole Martin. How are you doing?
I feel like I'm being typecast.
You are. I mean, really.
I was bored for
listen,
this role.
Listen to you. But Real Farm just got two bits of DLC. They have the Grunis Tall map, I hope I'm saying it right, and then the Potato Farm DLC, both developed by Triangle Studios, published by Sodesco. Both DLCs released March 2nd for Real Farm. Potato Pack is free for all. The Grunis Tall map is free for all who buy the game prior to the DLC releasing. So if you didn't already do that, it's going to be $10 for you. If you did buy the game already... good news. It's free. So
yay.
Tell us, what is this DLC?
So the DLC adds, it's essentially a whole new area to play on. I'd like to say that it adds a new like campaign to go along with the new area, but it doesn't. It's basically just a skin with some different layout, but it is an effective entire new map to play on. The farms are rearranged some, but again, it's not going to add to the campaign, but you can play the campaign on this map as opposed to playing it on the standard one. It is gorgeous for all intents and purposes. This is a really pretty map, and it is 4K. If you've got, you know, the Xbox One X.
4Ks is...
Yeah, and you've got a 4K TV, you're going to be like, holy shit, this is gorgeous. And even if you don't, and if you're like me, and you're playing on pretend 4K with an Xbox One S, you're still going to be like, this is really pretty. Because it is. It's really, really well done. I have to, in the name of transparency, I have to say, I didn't put a whole lot of time into the DLC because this is my husband's specialty. And so we kind of tag team these kind of reviews, and he plays most of it while I sit there and go like, can I have the controller now?
No,
we have two Xboxes now, and I still can't get the controller from him.
Nice.
It's some shit. So
that's some bullshit.
But he helps fill me in, because otherwise I'm sitting there going, So that's a track. You can't just use, oh, okay. Because there's the trick. With the potato pack, it does add new equipment for you to play on, because surely what's there for the other 7 crops isn't enough. Mm-hmm. And you need more tractors and things to hook up to tractors. However, with the other crops in the game, you get multiple, and I had to have D explain all this to me because I didn't know what I was looking at. To me, they're all hunks of metal that do things. But to him, they're special brands, and they're equipment that handles this part of cultivating and that part of digging holes in different ways. But one thing that he did make clear that I understood marginally was that for the other crops, there's a healthy variety of equipment to choose from, and you can either buy it or you can rent it or what have you as you need it. For the potato pack, there is not that kind of variety. There is one piece of equipment for each necessary step of the cultivating process, and that's it. So if you were looking to like buy a better potato thing, you can't. If you're cultivating potatoes, it's with that piece of equipment, and that's that. Which is kind of a shame. You'd like to see the, you know, increased variety. That's one of the things that the Real Farm game does well in the base game for the other equipment, is that, you know, there's a lot of different brands of equipment. Like, I recognize some of these brands because we do live on a farm and a fucking typecasting.
See, you typecast yourself. Your own fucking fault.
You know, but it's neat to see, you know, brands I recognize and stuff in these games. This time that didn't happen. Because I'm like, I don't recognize, what is this? I can't even pronounce it.
Well, you clearly need to do more potato related farming at your place.
Right? No, because you know what? We grow them in barrels. Because we're hobby farmers, goddammit.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so potato pack adds potatoes and some new equipment. Anything else?
Unfortunately, not much else.
I wouldn't say unfortunate. It's free DLC pack. It's free.
It is. That is the thing. Like, I'd like to have seen either sets of DLC, maybe add some more animals or just a little extra variety or something. They were a little lacking in that regard. For what they are, though, what is there, it's done well. And the biggest complaint, again, with the potatoes is like, there could have been more equipment just to choose from. And that was Dee's complaint, because I was sitting there not even understanding what I was looking at in the first place.
Well, more equipment could always come in the future. I'm not expecting too much from free packs. I think it's nice that they're just releasing free DLC to begin with, because
there's more to come.
Yeah.
There's another set of DLC in the works. So, I mean, as far as free DLC goes, yeah, you always have wishes that there's more or whatever, but it's free.
Yeah.
And it looks really pretty, and it works functionally fine. Like, there was no complaints control-wise. What little time I got to touch the controller, I was like, yeah, I can manage this. I know what I'm doing. You know, back up, move forward. I got this.
Nice. So for the price of free, what do you think of Potato Farm? Should people get it for free?
If you are already enjoying Real Farm, then yeah, you should definitely go ahead and get the potato pack. If you bought the DLC, the extra map, and you have to pay for it as opposed to having got it, you know, because you bought the game before March 2nd, then I'm a little more hesitant to say just try it. If you really, really enjoy the game already, then you're probably going to look forward to having an extra map to play on. Like, my husband just spent a stupid amount of time driving around on his tractor looking at shit. And he was happy. And you can't fault somebody for that. You got to find your happy in the world. And if driving around on a new map is in a digital tractor does it, go for it.
Indeed. I agree. Got to find your happiness in the world, your happy place.
Yeah, you know, find your tractor.
Find your tractor. There you go. I was just about to say, good having you on talking about this stuff. I was going to ask for your final thoughts, but I think those are perfect final thoughts.
Yeah, let's just leave it there. I'm content with that.
So, final thoughts?
Find your tractor.
All right, next game to talk about is called Ion Maiden, developed by Void Point LLC, published by 3D Realms, released February 28th on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Shelley Bombshell Harrison earned her codename as a bomb disposal expert for the Global Defense Force when transhumanist cult mastermind Dr. Jadis Heskel, what a name, unleashes a cybernetic army on Neo DC. Shelley decides it's time to start chucking bombs rather than defusing them. Previewing this one, CJ Greenwood, welcome back. How are you doing?
I had no idea there was that much story in this game.
Yeah, believe it or not.
There's not a whole lot of story in the actual part of the game, but yeah, I guess there's a backstory to it. Why not?
Well, the joys of early access, right?
Yeah, well, I also think it's basically designed the way a lot of old school games are, where there's a story, but there's not much of an actual story. It's just run around and kill things in levels.
Which, you know, old school gaming. This is meant to be straight out of the 90s in the vein of like Duke Nukem 3D, Blood, Shadow Warrior, stuff like that. So what is this game? What is Ion Maiden?
Well, you just described it perfectly. So
all right. So what do you think? For $20.
No, you were pretty spot on, though. It plays just like all the other old school shooters. I mean, it's a little bit more modern in the design, in the sense that it just looks a lot cleaner while also having the old school like texture graphics. It has reloading, which is a really old, weird thing for an old game. Like, normally it's just like your whole clip is just what you have. So if there's like 12 bullets in the bottom corner, you have 12 bullets. But if in this game, it's like, hey, you got to reload after six of them.
Nice.
That's just really like weird and unique for an old school game. It's also the strafing shit, and you can look in all directions.
So kinda, like true old school 90s gameplay here.
Yeah. The default settings have it, the turning to the right and left arrow, which is really fucking weird. And I had to change that shit immediately. I had to be like, no, I want strafing.
You needed to modernize it.
Yeah, exactly. I can't play it that old school. Like, I like old school games, but no, that's too old.
Oh, God. So how much content is in this? I know it's early access. What all's there so far?
It's just a decent little like preview campaign. I don't think this is a full campaign yet, but there's a few levels to play through. And there's quite a few different enemies to kill off throughout the thing so far. Not a whole lot of variety yet, but there's a lot of great design in each of the levels. Like, the levels themselves are various. It's just, there's a lot of the same enemy. I will say, like, the levels are surprisingly big. And unlike a lot of old school games, there is no, like, there's nothing that really gives you a definitive end to a level. It's kind of just like, when you hit it, it'll say there's like 20 unexplored secrets, and that's basically it. But it's not like an end screen where it gives you like kills and what you did throughout that level. It just kind of loads you right into the next one, and you get started with the next part.
Nice.
I will say that there's, in this game, there's a lot of hidden, like, just like old school games, but some of the main objectives are also hidden, which can be frustrating.
Because
I got stuck in a room for like 20 minutes not being able to figure out where the fuck it is and gave up that day. And then I came back to it, had to restart the first level, go through all that again because my save got deleted, I think just due to an update. So I will forewarn that it is possible to lose your save after an update.
Well, once again, the joys of early access, just shit can happen.
Exactly. You can't help that. But I got back to that point, and within like 3 minutes, I figured it out. And I was like, fuck. Nice. I wish I would have figured this out earlier. It was honestly very... it wasn't obvious, but I had come past that part multiple times, so I was like annoyed that I didn't get it, because it's like, damn it, I really didn't see this. But it's just like a hidden little switch, and the joys of a small little switch like that that's floating in midair is like, or not really floating in midair, it's in water, but it's like, it's up above, so at a certain angle it's not even visible, because it'll look, it appears as though it's just a little flat line, like you have to come across it at the right angle. So it's like that's a little too hidden. I don't think main objectives should be that hidden. It should just be secrets.
Yeah, I agree on that one. Hiding the actual like main campaign stuff that you got to do is
it can become frustrating, especially when it's not a puzzle game. It's like you're so used to this. The game is mostly just a quick paced like action shooter, and then all of a sudden you're stuck in a room for 10 minutes with no action.
Yeah. On the bright side, all the stuff in the preview version is like its own exclusive mini campaign, and the full version of the game is going to have its own unique campaign, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. It gives you the ability to try it without spoiling anything for yourself and having to replay it when the full game comes out again.
Which I think that's pretty smart. You're basically buying a game and a half with this.
Yeah, at this point, and then eventually just one game again.
Yeah.
Unless they keep the preview campaign in for some reason.
That would be neat. That if you buy in now, that you would keep the preview campaign once it fully updates to the main campaign. That would be a neat little bonus, I think.
Yeah, just like a few extra levels to play through if you finish the main game.
Yeah, that would be pretty damn neat.
I got to give them a lot of credit, though, at the level design and the way the world looks in itself. Because there's like, it's just so various. Like the one level at the beginning level, so I don't like ruin anything, is like it goes from this like underground, I think, train system. Or no, it's like a highway that's underground, like, you know, with the tunnel. And then it goes, you progress through that, and then eventually you're at like a fucking office building, like in a skyscraper. And it's just like, that's so interesting that you can go between completely different areas. And the amount of different buildings you can actually enter in this, like a lot of doors actually open in this game. Unlike a lot of them where it's just like, those doors are for show.
Always the best doors.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still plenty of doors that are locked and they go like, and when you try to open it, to show that it's locked. But there's a lot that you can go into. There's a lot that you can find, and there's a lot of hidden objects with more ammo. I feel like they also added a new thing with the last update, where if you kill somebody with a bomb, they now drop like ammo or armor, which is pretty awesome, because before you'd run out of ammo really quick in this game, and then there'd be no way to really get it unless you just kind of find it laying around.
Well, that shows that they're updating it, which is a good thing.
Yeah, well, it also shows that they're updating it when you lose your save. Small little joke.
That could have been a one-off thing. You never know. Could have just been something fucky going on.
Very possible. Also, one last little bug that I'm only reporting so that they can possibly fix it if they don't know about it, is that now with this latest update, every time I like go into the – just like hit escape to go into the menus, like nothing shows up. You only see the title, and then – you have to like scroll down with the arrow keys to eventually get the stuff to show up, because you can't hit it with the mouse because it's not there yet.
I'm going to really guess weird. That'll be taken care of.
Yeah.
I would imagine something so like that.
Because it's a menu problem. Like, yeah. It just doesn't load it.
Well, looking on Steam, they're looking to be in early access for about 6 months. So the full version will be out sometime this fall. Full version is supposed to have full new campaign with 7 zones, tons of enemies, weapons, tracked module music. Looks to be a pretty faithful 90s game. And in a unique twist, they're not going to raise the price. So the $20 is going to be the $20.
And at this point, that just means that gives you a good wiggle room, because if you're somebody that wants to wait until all the glitches and everything is like patched out and kind of smoothed over, then you can do that without worrying about having to spend an extra $10-$15.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that means that you can support them now, and then you don't have to worry about there isn't really any worry if you just support them now.
Yeah. So at $20, is it worth supporting them now?
Yeah, I mean, give them the money so that they can make this game the best that it can be, because it's definitely a fun game. If you're into this genre, you're going to like it. It's a very fast pace. The shooting is precision and right on. Like, everything is perfect about it. It's just very glitchy. They have frame rate issues from time to time, which is surprising for a game that's designed like this. But at the same time, that's just probably something to do with the early access and that the engine's not 100% flawless yet.
Well, I'm sure in a couple of months we'll have you back on to get a final verdict, but always good having you on to chat. You should come back more often.
Wink, wink, I might.
Do you have any final thoughts to sum up Ion Maiden?
Don't get it confused with Iron Maiden.
All right, next game to talk about is Killing Floor 2. They just had a beta for some preview content for stuff coming out later this year. Game developed and published by Tripwire Interactive. This is a preview of unreleased future content for the game. The game is already available Xbox One, PC, PS4. The new content includes two new maps, a new game mode, new weapons, a bunch of other new shit, and here to talk about it, Royal Sefton and Ian Griffin. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Fantastic.
Good stuff. So you guys are tag team in this, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We both had a chance to play it separately and together.
So who wants to go first?
Hmm.
Don't all jump out once.
I think the cricket chirping in the audience.
Chirp, chirp. So, okay. Royal, you start off. What kind of fun stuff have you done with the new content?
So first and foremost, I was fairly new to Killing Floor 2. I think I got it as part of a monthly bundle or something. And so when you asked me to check out the new content, I had also check out the old content and get familiar with the game a bit more. But yeah, I was able to check out some of the new weapons, the new character, which is DAR, D-A-R. I forget what it stands for, but basically it's a robot.
It stands for DAR.
Domestic Assistance Robot.
Ah.
Is it a maid?
No, it is most certainly not a maid.
Yeah.
You mean you don't clean up on the battlefield with DAR? I'm an asshole. Okay, so new character with DAR. What are the new maps in here?
So there's one that's only playable as an endless map, and that's a new game mode that we should also talk about a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yep. Rather than a limited number of waves, you can basically play an infinite number of waves until you die.
Exactly. Yeah.
Forever, and it's like it's endless. Is it an endless game mode?
Yes, until
pretty much, yeah.
Fitting name.
And the endless only map is called Dissector.
Oh, for people to die?
Or dissect.
Oh.
Clever.
It should also be mentioned that there are a new set of, I don't want to say achievements, but there's your little daily quests, and not quests, but daily missions. You have your weekly missions. But now there is a seasonal tab, and all of these are pretty much directly related to endless mode. And it's basically you get an achievement for every five waves you're able to survive.
Nice.
Correct. Yeah, that fifth wave will involve a boss fight, generally.
Every five waves is a boss fight. The farthest I've ever made it was 10, because on the one time I tried it, I ended up getting the Patriarch. And while for those who aren't familiar with the game, the Patriarch is sort of like the uber penultimate boss.
Hey.
Think Predator with a mobile weapons platform.
Oh God.
And the downside is that, unfortunately, given the time I was playing, because it was probably like 3-4 in the morning, it was kind of difficult like finding other people to play with, and I had one other person. And we were trying to tag team the Patriarch, and we were doing okay, but a problem is that when he gets low enough on health, he'll ghost out, try to run away so he can regenerate his health while we're busy tangoing with all the extra, funky monsters that just kind of wander in to try to distract us and just make things that much more difficult. And then he'd roll back in with like 90% health and just open up on us again.
Yeah, my Killing Floor time is fairly limited across PS4 and Xbox, but even I know the Patriarch is a real motherfucker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the boss at wave 5 was noticeably downgraded, but I mean, he's not meant to cornhole you. I mean, it's only wave 5.
Right.
So it wasn't too much of a hassle to get down. I mean, it was the Dr. Hans German McGerman stereotype. No, I'm serious. Like if you listen to his voice, it almost sounds like Seth MacFarlane doing his generic German accent.
Exactly. But,
Yeah, I mean, oh, he still has like the same physics, except it's just very abbreviated, especially nice, since you melt him down. But like I said, the second time we got the Patriarch, and it was just like, okay, well, maybe he won't be as hardcore as he is in the standard game. And like I said, his attacks were slightly downgraded, so he wouldn't virtually one-shot you if he got within melee range. But trying to keep on him while he's trying to run off and regenerate was a mother-loving bitch.
Nice. So overall, how is the map? Is it a cool map, nice layout?
Yeah,
I like it. I mean, it kind of opens up every couple waves, new areas open up, these electrified barriers will come down, you get another floor, there's some traps, like flamethrowing traps in it. It was pretty slick.
Nice. I know there are three new weapons as well. I'm not sure if you guys dabbled with Firebug, SWAT, Demolitionist, Gunslinger. Have either of you guys tried out the new weapons?
I think I tried out, was it new shotgun?
The Husk cannon is basically like a new shotgun. Yeah, that one's on the Firebug and the Demolitionist.
Yep.
So, yeah, Royal, I'm guessing you meddled around with the new weapons?
Yes.
What did you think? And
they're all pretty stomping. The MAC-10, which is available for the Firebug and the SWAT. I may be mistaken, but it looked like it was firing off incendiary rounds or something, because everything I would hit would start to burst into flame. Yep. But pretty powerful. Nice. Pretty powerful. Made the SWAT character a lot more useful. I'm complete crap with SWAT. But the Husk cannon impressed the crap out of me. I remember a lot of the flat cannon out of Unreal Tournament. Really, really powerful, really hard hitting. Shotgun like, basically. Love that weapon. And then the other one that was in there is
AF-2011 A1.
Yes. And it also has a dual option if you get enough dosh to buy it. Very, very powerful handgun. It almost seems like it's a fletchette, or it has a burst mode or something, because it says you have 16 rounds, but you go through them super, super fast.
Nice. But
really powerful.
Tear shit up.
Yes, for my money, the Desert Eagle in duel is a little bit better, but it's still pretty nice. And there are a lot of challenges, dailies associated just with using these weapons. I was able to get some dailies just with the AF when I was soloing Gunslinger, trying out some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nice, sounds good. So any concerns with the new content?
Not really, but considering how we're still pretty green to the game as a whole, we might not be the right people to ask. it's one of those things where I honestly don't necessarily have any concerns, but I haven't played it long enough to really know the game inside and out, all the nuances to, call shenanigans or recognize them if and when I see them. But
what about you, Royal? Any concerns?
So, couple things. The first couple times you play as the Dar, I don't know, in my case, it scared the shit out of me, because he makes a lot of really loud, squeaky-ass noises whenever something, like if he sees ammo, you're just, and all this other stuff comes out.
Oh, God.
He's very amusing. It's like he kind of staples together different people's speech. Like, I'm welding this door and he's quoting one of the other characters. Really unique experience. The thing that I also noticed that seems like it's kind of a big balancing difference, there is a huge boost to one of the gunslinger's regular weapons. His 1858 revolver doubled in power. And I soloed the gunslinger, albeit on normal difficulty, through an endless wave, and I got up to 13 before I tapped out, and I'm pretty new to the game. And I have a feeling a lot of that had to do with just how powerful some of these weapons are that the gunslinger had access to, and that those 1858 revolvers being, doubled up. Damn. I suppose maybe that's compensatory. Maybe people weren't playing the gunslinger enough, or it was just too weak. That could very well be why. I'd expect that's probably a good balance adjustment.
Yeah, because I have talked with a couple of guys who've a lot more time playing Killing Floor, like Renton, the guy that we played with that one night.
Yes,
and he mentioned that Gunslinger is one of the trickier ones to really level because of the pistol, you have to use pistol options and stuff like that, and that's probably why they boosted up that particular weapon. Mm-hmm. And they're just trying to see how it fits, whether it's a little much or. Where it's bringing that particular class up to parity with the rest of the classes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think you might well be right, but there's a small tweak for the 500 Magnum, and it's only like a 6% boost, 7% boost. And for my money, I don't know if I was supposed to be able to tell a difference, obviously, but I found it kind of underwhelming. I was really looking forward to using that weapon, and it only has, five round revolving chamber. So you're reloading constantly, and it didn't feel like it was all that powerful. So that was kind of a letdown, but the new weapons are more than make up for it. So,
yeah. Good stuff. Out of curiosity, were there any perk choices that you could use in conjunction to make up for the shortcomings?
That I don't know yet. I'm only level 8 on the gunslinger, so
yeah,
we shall see.
Yeah. Oh, and that is, speaking of levels and stuff like that, that is another thing I strongly recommended is that when I went into endless mode, I used my, I think it was a level 15 firebug.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are, if you really want to get serious about it, obviously you'd probably want to make sure that you roll in there with a max level with all of your stuff unlocked so you can really get the most bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I went in there with like a level 0 or anything under, I'm trying to think if it was level restricted or not. Was it level restricted? Or no, that's the weekly one.
Sure. Yeah, I was able to start just solo play endless with whatever I wanted, but as far as joining a server, I'm not sure. I didn't get a chance to join an endless server.
Okay. Yeah. Then I'm confusing it with the weekly, because I know the weekly one usually has like a level requirement because it's like super hardcore mode.
Right.
Cool. So overall, this is content. It'll be coming out eventually. We don't have an exact date yet. Should be a free update to the game. Should fans be excited for this? Is this more good shit for Killing Floor 2?
Yeah. I mean, it adds a little, like a whole new game mode, and it is enjoyable. And it gives, and I think I know why they did it, because I can see how, like, if you played the game long enough that you maxed out all your classes and everything, you've constantly play on the hardest difficulty and you know the game well enough that it's really not a challenge, the endless mode will give those end gamers something to strive for, something, a little something more. I mean, you've reached the end game, you've beaten everything. Well, here's something to inevitably challenge how well you can play.
Awesome. It sounds awesome. One of these days, I really hope that my computer will run well enough to play with you guys. Because all I could do was watch you stream it and be like, I want friendship and companionship and joy. I need it in my life. But we have one final game to talk about tonight, and Ian, you're tackling this one. It is called Elium Prison Escape, developed and published by Lost Artisan Games, released February 28th on Steam for $13.99. Take on the role of Jaren Sorengar, a master swordsman seeing his days pass as a weary war prisoner. Time has come to meet fate, find an escape, or die in the attempt. Ian, tell us about this one.
Okay, well, when I went into this game, as my usual protocol, I went in completely cold turkey. I did not look up anything about it aside from the quick glance at the Steam page just to get what the blurb was about. And I went in totally cold turkey, and in all honesty, you probably described more of the plot from what you just said than what I actually got in the game. I mean, basically, you start off and you're a medieval guy, you're in a medieval prison, and it's time to medieval escape. That's pretty much the bulk of it. And I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, because as I played and kind of learned and figured it out, the game isn't necessarily a narrative adventure so much as like a more of like a challenge thing, because there's actually like buddy scoreboards and stuff like that. And when you finally escape, you are scored based on various criteria. And it's more of like, hey, Joe, I got this many points in my run. Can you do better?
Mm.
So, and there's all sorts of different achievements and stuff like that. There's one for like how much money you can, like as you go along, you can collect money off of guards you stealth kill, or just money just lying around. And there's actually an achievement of obtaining at least, I want to say it was like 250 before you actually escape. There's another achievement. Oh, actually, I don't want to get ahead of myself.
250 coins?
Yeah. Yep. And the coins,
like the coins that you can hold individually?
Yes. Yes. Hey, let never be said that I don't know how to make it rain.
For the people who don't know what we're talking about, would you like to explain the fun little video that you shared with me?
Yeah, basically, I was in my inventory, and actually, I'll get to that in just a minute. I was in my inventory, and I was pretty much cleaning out equipment that I did not need. And my mouse kind of, my mouse cursor kind of skipped. And when I went to drop an unnecessary shield, I ended up clicking on my coins. And when you drop your coins, you drop them one at a time in rapid succession. So it just looked like I exploded in a fountain of coins. The downside to
watching
this.
Watching the clip on Twitch was just like, let me move this. Oh, no, no. Oh, no. God, no. Oh.
And then I finally tossed off the item at the end. Yeah. And the downside to that is that you have to pick up every single individual coin one at a time. And
oh,
I have
my
like
lord!
I have like 322 coins to pick up.
Oh, so you were going for the achievement?
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Did you get it? And or did you just not bother picking up all the coins?
No, I picked them all up. I mean, well, the thing was is that I was actually, I was on the final level, and I was right before the, I don't want to call it a boss, more like the final confrontation before you can escape. And the room I was in was actually like a room just loaded to the gills with equipment out the wazoo. So like, this is your last chance to armor yourself up, get a crap ton of weapons, and get ready for the final hurrah.
It's like the autosave before a boss battle. It's like, oh, shit's about to go down.
Well, actually, speaking of saves, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. Anyways, let's see. Yeah, so the story in itself is very simple. You're a dude, you're trying to escape this giant labyrinthine prison. And the graphics, let's see, graphics are okay. I mean, they're not super crazy high quality, but they do well enough to, you know, get the theme, the ambience to get across. The controls were surprisingly practical and intuitive. You have different modes where basically you have an interaction mode where you can pick up items, open things, close things, and then you have combat. And there's a stealth mode, very much in the vein of, like, if you ever played Thief, where basically how far into lighting you are reveals you. Whereas if you're standing in the shadows, you are considerably more stealthy. The HUD is very minimalistic in a very good way. You have, like, a, you know, your health bar's on the right. There's a stamina system, which I'll get into in a second. And, you know, a very, very tiny crosshair that lets you know whether you can interact with an item or how stealthed you are in your environment. The combat is very hit or miss, literally and figuratively. If you've ever played, was it Chivalry, Medieval Warfare?
No.
It's sort of that style where basically you click to initiate an attack and then you swipe the mouse in the direction you want to swing in.
Oh boy.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. And you also, and you can also, let's see, alternate right clicking is, you know, to block, and you have a little quick jab system where you're, if, you know, someone's trying to shield up, you can throw a quick punch and then try to follow it up with another attack. It's, you know, like I said, very hit or miss. It's the sort of system that you'll either be able to wrap your head around and kind of get into it, or you'll just fucking hate it with every fiber of your being.
Is that where the stamina comes in as well?
Yeah. Yep. And there's also a lovely mechanic that I enjoy, and I call it the Spartan kick, where basically you tap the space bar and you just, you know, this is Sparta kick and knock
this
a guy back.
This is Ilium.
Yeah, and it comes in handy because especially like if guys are turtling up behind a shield, you can kind of give them a kick to kind of reel them back for a quick second. It's also fast enough that if you see them winding up for a swing, you can interrupt them.
Ooh.
And then jump in with like a counter thrust or swing or whatever. And they'll do it to you too. And sometimes, and I think there's actually an achievement for it, is if you're fighting along an edge of a precipice or just a high end, you know, battlement or whatever, you can actually kick them off it and kill them. And I think there's an achievement for it. And
I'd be disappointed if there wasn't.
Yeah, but it's okay. The only issues I had was trying to gauge weapon range, and this might have just been a me thing. And sometimes it would seem like the enemy would be able to hit me, and then I'd try to swing back, and I'd just catch nothing but air. Let's see. And there is a tutorial, by the way. In fact, you can't even play the campaign, the standard campaign game, unless you go through the tutorial. And you were watching me do that. Just note to the devs, you might want to go in and remove the ability to pickpocket, because you can do that. Because I was kind of stuck on a... Was it the parrying?
I think I was so, stuck on, yeah.
I was stuck on something, and I went to hit a button, and I missed, and I hit the pickpocket button. And I ended up stealing the tutorial dummy's sword off of him. So instead of swinging a sword at me for the parry, he just sat there and punched me in the face.
That's the beauty of games like this, that you just find weird shit like that.
Yep. And let's see. I think the only solid complaints I really had about the combat was that it seems, in my experience, like virtually impossible to physically outrun the enemies, because it seemed like I'll turn around and just start sprinting along, and they always seem to be perpetually on my model, hitting me in the process.
Oh, God.
I should actually, and you can change camera modes. You can play it in first person, or you can play it in third person, whichever, you know, tickles your fancy, whichever feels more comfortable for you. And I should have jumped into third person to see whether or not there was any weird shenanigans going on. Let's see. But the combat, you know, like I said, it's, you're going to love it or hate it. You're going to love it or hate it. The level design.
I was going to say, overall, $14 on this one. What do you think of it?
Well, 14, I would say give it a try. I would give it a try, but
that's about it's a good thing. That, try it is one of our ratings.
Yeah. It's a sort of thing. Like, if it's in your wheelhouse, I think you'll enjoy it. If it's not, don't.
Oh, man. Well, guys, always good having you on, chitty-chatting about games. That is it for this episode. Thank you again to everyone for dropping by, hanging out, chatting with me. Royal, you didn't get to talk as much. Do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I don't.
God damn it. Ian, do you?
An apple a day will keep anyone away if you throw it hard enough.